Autoline After Hours live from Woodward Avenue is brought to you by Mopar, Chrysler Group's service, parts, and customer care brand. For more info, visit mopar.com/woodward. Saab, move your mind. Visit cruisethe95.com. Bridgestone, passion for excellence. And by Hyundai. People are talking about Hyundai uncensored. See what they're saying at Hyundai.com.
Well, here we are, special, usually Thursday, but today Wednesday night, special, because we're at the Woodward Dream Cruise. I mean, we are literally at the Woodward Dream Cruise. It officially doesn't kick off until this Sunday, or is it Saturday? And first, I got to say, joining me as ever is the auto extremist, Peter DeLorenzo. Great having you here on this special that we're doing.
John, thrilled to be here. We are an eighth of a mile north of the epicenter of the automotive world this week. Right down here is the main center of it all for the cruise. And they've been out here all summer, but really intensely starting last weekend, and every night it is just building to Saturday.
Now, we'll have the president of the Dream Cruise on in a little bit, but is it officially Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday.
Saturday's the day. And it used to be just a one-day event, and it started earlier and earlier and earlier. So here we are, Wednesday. We'll be showing you later on. There's all kinds of people out on Woodward right now, all kinds of classic cars cruising up and down. It's going to be a great show that we've got. We've got a very interesting array of all different kinds of people that we'll be talking to. But Peter's going to be looking at some of the other cars here. I've got some more things to get through, and we'll be joining up shortly here in a minute.
Okay, John.
But first, we've got to thank our partners who are streaming this with us tonight, which includes Wards.com. Have to thank the moderators who are watching the chat room for us, Miss Motormouth and Rumblestrip. Two others that we have to acknowledge, usually John Wills and Mud Monster are monitoring it. They're going to be here with us tonight. Also, have to thank the different sponsors that have made this special show possible. Mopar, boy, they've been terrific with us. We'll be talking with Pietro Gorlier, who runs Mopar, later in the show. Also, Saab. A lot of people say, "What Saab, what's it doing with the Dream Cruise?" Well, it just so happens that we are in Royal Oak, Michigan, and now the new headquarters for Saab North America are in Royal Oak. So I'll be joined by Mike Colleran, the president of Saab North America, later in the show. And we've got a Saab 9.5. We'll be talking about that. I've been all over this thing because I hadn't seen that before. We're going to be wandering around this great display area that we've got. Some of our sponsors have brought products. Some others are bringing some interesting cars here. In fact, you can't see it now. We'll show you in a little while. Boss 302, the new Ford Explorer as well. The carbon edition of the Corvette. We've got a lot of classic cars. We'll be walking around talking to people like that. We'll have a camera and some folks down on Woodward Avenue so you can see what it's really like as these vehicles come up and down the avenue there. And, in fact, right now I ought to let you see some of more what we're talking about. I'm going to throw it to Peter DeLorenzo and take it away, Peter.
I'm standing here in front of the 2012 Boss 302 Mustang, the special Laguna Seca package, which is sensational. It's been the buzz of the industry this week, but that's not all. We have Dave Parasak, the chief engineer of the Mustang, with us tonight. We've got Taj Schechter, the chief engineer of Chevrolet Corvette. We have Maury Callum, the head of Ford Design of the Americas. We've got an all-star cast. We've got the new Explorer here. We've got a Z06 Corvette. We've got a bunch of great vehicles that to see, and the people behind them. So I think we're going to have, I think you're going to enjoy what we have for you tonight. And are we doing something else now, John? Yeah.
Thanks, Peter. As you can tell, I'm standing right in front of Woodward Avenue right now. In fact, if I don't know if you can get a shot of that, Craig, across the street. This is very typical of what you see on Woodward Avenue. People out with their classic cars. They got folding chairs. They bring their cars out. They sit down with them. We'll see all kinds of vehicles cruising up and down Woodward. Still early in the evening right now. Later in the show, we're going to see a lot more of these cars. And believe me, this is Wednesday. This thing doesn't even officially start until Saturday. And Saturday, you cannot believe what happens. There will be a million people out here. And we'll get Tony Michaels from the Woodward Dream Cruise to fill in the numbers. But I know in the past there's been as many as 75,000 classic cars that cruise up and down Woodward here. Joining us later in the show, too, we've got a couple of my colleagues coming on board. Mark Phelan from the Detroit Free Press, who just wrote a great column in the Free Press about the Woodward Dream Cruise, gave this very webcast that we're talking about a plug in that article for Autoline After Hours. Also joining us will be Scott Burgess from the Detroit News. They bring a lot of knowledge about the history of this event, too. But to give you an idea of the history of it, we've got a video that we did a number of years ago about the whole cruising scene on Woodward, and why don't we throw to that video right now?
This year marks the 11th anniversary of the Woodward Avenue Dream Cruise, and in that time, the event has grown to become the largest single-day automotive event in the world. This year, an estimated 2 million people and nearly 100,000 classic, vintage, and custom cars are making a pilgrimage to this hallowed stretch of paved real estate. The Dream Cruise began in 1995 as a modest, grassroots event designed to benefit a single charity and became an instant hit. That first year, organizers planned an attendance of 10,000 people. 250,000 people showed up, and Detroit's cruising culture claimed the event as their own. The following year, the nine communities that border Woodward came together and designated the third Saturday of each August as the official Dream Cruise date. The rest is history.
This is the granddaddy of all cruises. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Dream Cruise is the best car event in the world. I mean, it's the largest one-day automotive event in the world. And as a classic car owner and sort of a gearhead and a car enthusiast for many years, I decided to actually purchase the 68 Firebird after the very first Dream Cruise 10 years ago, and have been coming ever since.
The best way to describe it, it's a celebration of the automotive history. It's a celebration of Woodward Avenue, which has a legend of its own. And it's an opportunity for people to come out for the day to a great family fun event, to be able to enjoy one-of-a-kind vehicles, which they may never see again. And it's an opportunity for them just to celebrate the car culture.
We're back here live, of course, looking over Woodward Avenue, where the Dream Cruise really has started. And joining me right now is Tony Michaels, the president of the Woodward Dream Cruise, but also with a company called the Parade Company.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the president and CEO of the Parade Company in town, which runs America's Thanksgiving Parade and the Target Fireworks. And another thing I'm allowed to do is the executive director of one of the greatest events in the nation, the Woodward Dream Cruise.
How long have you been in this, Tony?
Oh, this is the second year, and we're about to hopefully re-up for another 3 years. It's as good as it gets. We have a great team that works on this.
So, I mean, you must be getting butterflies right now, because even though there's a lot of action right now, this is Wednesday night, it really doesn't get cranking until the weekend, right?
Well, I'll tell you what, Friday night, it is crazy. It is alive and humming. You can hear the engines behind us. People are lining up, and it's Wednesday. Friday night, it really starts to motor up.
Yeah. And how many people, how many cars? I threw out a couple of figures before. I know in the past we've had as many as a million people and I think 70 to 75,000 classic cars here on the day itself.
Yeah, John, actually, I mean, it's been estimated up to 1.3 million, 1.4 million
Wow.
As far as people. And remember, they come and go. So, you know, that day there's people in the morning and it really cranks up around noon. But people are coming and going all day and right into the evening. Probably 60 to 70,000 cars, you know, over that stretch of day. It is just amazing. And most importantly, the smiles, the people, the camaraderie, the stories about the great vehicles that they owned and drove and the experiences on Woodward Avenue.
I mean, I don't know of any other automotive event like this in its size. There's plenty of other car shows, classic car shows, concours, automotive shows for the new products from the car companies, but nothing like this, and it's such a grassroots effort. That's got to separate it from just about anything else.
Well, that's exactly it, and that's what we talk about a lot is grassroots. It's not a Mardi Gras. It is family fun. It's safe. And it was started by people who wanted to relive the memories and to talk to other people about the cars they owned, where they, the drive-ins that they went to, where they met their girlfriend, their boyfriend, those types of things. Great grassroots effort, and it just carries on now, and it's a magical event.
It is magical, and yet there's a little bit of controversy too, right? Because some residents in the area, some, I'm not saying a lot, and some store owners complain about the traffic and the headaches and that sort of thing. But how do you counter that kind of argument?
Well, I'll tell you what, this is so good for our region. It's hard to even explain bringing people together like this. Detroit, as you know, has had its problems over the last few years. This is one of those fantastic events. Roger Penske was putting on the great Detroit Grand Prix on Belle Isle. We've lost that, and hopefully Roger's going to bring that back. This has got to stay strong. It's got to be strong, and we need the support of everybody. The other part of this is the businesses. A lot of them sell their parking lots for a substantial amount of money. Others open up, and they figure out how to promote, during the Woodward Dream Cruise. So let's get creative. Let's pull together and keep this thing as rock solid as it's ever been.
It's been rock solid, and, you mentioned when you say 1.3 million, 1.4 million people.
Yeah.
I've never heard of a bad incident at this thing, and it's been going on for more than a decade. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's a really good point. Greg Rassel, who is the president of the board of the Woodward Dream Cruise, he preaches that in every meeting to the entire board. It's about safety. It's about family. If we pick up the newspaper on Sunday morning and watch the news, and there haven't been major incidents, and it's been family fun, then it's been a successful Woodward Dream Cruise.
Talk a bit about the economic impact. There's got to be a lot of plus for this region from the Dream Cruise.
Yeah, there really is. And I'll tell you, right now it's estimated about $70 million in revenue, $70 million in revenue for the region. People coming from across the country. But it's growing. People from around the country are realizing what you said earlier, there's nothing like this. So if you're a car aficionado, car buff, this is where you want to be, and it's only going to help this region, this city.
You doing anything different this year that folks should be aware of?
We had the Beach Boy concert a week ago at DT Energy Music Theater, where the Beach Boys performed, and a portion of that went to help Woodward Dream Cruise, Inc. We have an expanded group of sponsors from the Michigan Lottery to Chevrolet this year, Motor City Hotel Casino, and others, and we're going for the safe event, and next year we hope to land a major title sponsor.
Well, good luck to you, Darren.
Thank you.
Good to hear about all the positive stuff that you're putting into this event.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Very good. To give you another idea, too, of the feel for what this whole Dream Cruise thing was about, how it got started, I don't mean started in recent times, in the last decade and a half. I mean the roots of that. I had an interview with a guy named Robert Genet, who's written a book all about the cruising scene back when Woodward was in its heyday. Let's go to a bit of that interview right now. Joining me in the studio right now is Robert Genet, who has written this book, Woodward Avenue, Cruising the Legendary Strip. Great to have you here in the studio with me, Robert.
Glad to be here.
What led you to do a book on Woodward Avenue?
Well, like I say, they had offered it to another author, and I thought, when I found out that he wasn't working on it, I begged to do it, because I thought it's a great story. It's the Woodward Dream Cruise is the greatest free car show on earth. There's no doubt of that. I live in California now, and there's nothing like that out there. I'm sorry. There is nothing. This is the place to be for cars. So, and I kind of lived some of the history, and you heard, back then of all the legendary drive-ins on Woodward and all the racing. So I thought there's just too many good stories to be told about it that tie into what people are doing today.
Tell us a little bit about digging up the research on this, the people you interviewed and all the photos that you got.
Well, the photos were the struggle, and I had some in my own collection. I had friends of mine looking for photos, went to the Stillman Collection here in Detroit, the public library. I have another friend who's gone to the Dream Cruise several years, and well, even though I've been there and shot some stuff, he had some stuff I didn't have. You look through high school yearbooks, you look through photo albums, you talk to people, and they say, well, yeah, I raced this car and that car, and I said, do you have any pictures? A friend of mine came up with a picture of a 57 Corvette he bought for, very little money, put a 421 Pontiac in it and went racing, and you just, everybody asked, have you got any pictures? So,
how long have you been working on the book?
Oh, it's a two-year project.
2 years?
Usually it's a year, and this one, because I didn't, at the end of a year, I called the publisher, and I said, I don't have enough content. I want to do more.
Content meaning photos.
Photos, and I wanted to get more stories. So I came back to Detroit, did some more research, got more material. So I was pretty happy at that point.
I'm here with Dave Parasak from Ford, and Dave has one of the best jobs in this business, if you're in this business. Dave is the chief engineer of the Mustang, one of the iconic American cars in history. And it's good to know that Ford is not stagnating at all with the car. Matter of fact, we're here with the 2012 Boss 302 with the Laguna Seca package, which was just flown in today from California because it was at for the Monterey Historics and the Pebble Beach Week. So, Dave, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
And, you know, where do we begin about this car? Now, you're doing a Boss Mustang in the spring, and that's a sensational package as it is. But tell us about the Laguna Seca, because this is, in fact, the closest thing that an average buyer can get to a race car in the street. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say it's the closest you're going to get to a race car with a license plate.
Yeah.
Well, after 40 years, the Boss is back. So what we did was we stayed true to its heritage. Everything on the car has been re-engineered so that it's worthy of carrying the Boss name. But when you asked me specifically about the Laguna Seca package, and the Laguna Seca basically takes an already outstanding vehicle and it just pumps it up. So we start with the engine. I mean, the Boss has, we're building off of the new 5-liter engine,
right,
that we just introduced in the 2011 Mustang. We've amped it up a little bit, changed the intake, changed a lot of the internals so that it can handle a higher RPM, raised the RPM to at least 7,500 RPM. This engine is putting out 440 horsepower naturally aspirated. It's got a torque curve that's just to die for. And we had to improve the cooling of the car because, you know, we're running at higher RPM. We're running it a lot harder.
Right.
So we've got a new radiator, fully sealed 360 degrees around, better intake in the front, totally revamped. The suspension system, completely redesigned. And the heart of the suspension system is a standard adjustable shocks and struts. So 5-position setting comes with standard setting 2. Just a screwdriver on the top, you can set your setting and
like
go to town.
Like the old days.
Just like the old days, right?
Yeah.
Stiffer springs, stiffer bars, stiffer bushings, everything. 19-inch wheels, very unique for the Laguna Seca package. Staggered wheels, 9 in the front, 10 in the back. Riding on our compound Pirelli tires, the Pirelli courses. 255 in the front and 285 in the rear. We've got the best braking system we've ever put on a Mustang. Of course, we're going fast.
Yeah.
Raise the top speed, 155 miles an hour. So we've got to stop this beast, right? 4-piston Brembos up front. We've got the GT calipers in the back, but a very unique performance friction pad specifically designed for the Boss.
Yeah.
And then we also put low expansion brake lines on all 4 corners. So it really connects your foot to the pedal. I mean, your foot to the caliper.
And, of course, you did the body work. You've got...
Yeah, well, you see the graphics and everything that, you know, we took a modern interpretation of the heritage of the Boss, so the iconic C-stripe there. We've got brake cooling ducts on the Laguna Seca package, which are standard. We've got this very aggressive front splitter that you can see here.
Very aggressive.
Yeah, and that works in concert with the spoiler in the rear, which is also aggressive. At about 140 miles an hour, the two of those together create about 90 pounds of downforce on this car. This car is absolutely connected to the ground. So every aspect we've been thinking about, making sure that this thing is right.
That's just, yeah.
Standard seats in the Laguna are Recaro seats. We also did a seat delete on the Laguna, which takes the rear seat out and puts in a torsion brace.
Yeah.
And that brace actually improves the rigidity of the vehicle by over 10%. You can see all the different treatments that we did inside here that are all unique to Boss. Black shifter ball, unique cluster, unique graphics on the instrument panel. You see a gauge pack. That is also standard. So water, oil, and then a performance gauge in the middle.
Now,
so,
is that standard on the Boss or the Laguna Seca?
On the Laguna Seca.
Okay.
Yep. And it does 0 to 60, 60 to 0, quarter mile, lateral Gs, all that. This car is pulling over 1 lateral G. It's 1.03 to be exact. So this car is all in, it's badass, and this thing is ready for the road.
It's great. Now, so we're talking spring of 2012. By the way, the black cue ball shifter is awesome.
yeah, 2012.
Thing is just, you know, this is the buzz of the business right now, and I hope our viewers appreciate the fact that having it here is pretty special.
Well,
but there's one other thing about this car.
Yeah.
Tell us about
that little signature right there.
Yeah.
That signature is Parnelli Jones's signature. Parnelli, I was fortunate enough to be riding with Parnelli on Friday at Laguna Seca Raceway when we introduced this to the media. And Parnelli is so proud of this vehicle and what it stands for and the fact that it is more than worthy of wearing the Boss name that he told me that I got his approval. So I said, well, since I have your approval, put it on the car. So he knelt down and he signed the vehicle.
That's very cool. Now, this started, you know, Parnelli won the 1970 Trans Am race at Laguna. Yep. And he always did well there when he battled with Donahue and the Penske Camaro and then later in the Javelins. But so he must have been, now he, did you lap the circuit with him or just do a couple?
Well, Parnelli was part of the entire development of this car. So about a year ago, we had our first working prototype of this vehicle out at Laguna Seca. And we were fortunate enough to have Parnelli join us. So on that day, I did lap the track with Parnelli. And I'll tell you, he still has it.
Yeah, well, he's...
he is still one awesome driver.
Yeah.
So he took it out. He gave us his opinion. He told us where we, you know, could make some tweaks and tunes and things like that. And we took all of that. We went back to Dearborn, got to work a little bit more, and then we brought it back out, and Parnelli got to drive it again. So I did get to lap with him, and it was fantastic.
Like I say, this guy's got one of the best jobs in the business. Now, Parnelli, for those of you too young to know about Parnelli, he was one of the toughest competitors in racing. And when he was contracted by Ford to run the Trans Am series, it was a sight to behold. I was there. I got to see him run, and he was just absolutely phenomenal in these cars. So I think it's pretty cool that you guys had him involved, and the resulting product is sensational.
Well, thank you. We always said if we're going to do this project, we were going to do it right, or we weren't going to do it at all. And Parnelli was a big part of making that happen. And
yeah,
I appreciate you having us here today.
Yeah, and there's no tape stripes and just saying it's cool. This is inside out all the way through.
We engineered it first, and then we did all the decorative work later. So, no, this is a real race car.
That's fabulous. Well, Dave, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's
in the
a magnificent car. It's great.
Right now I'm talking with Bill Kazira, the CEO of a supplier company called TI Automotive. And so you're sort of an automotive enthusiast on two ways. You run a supplier company in the industry, and you're here because you love the cars.
That's right, John. I was born and raised in the city here, and I've got gasoline in my blood, so it's really exciting to be here. I've worked in the city and been part of the automotive industry for actually more than 40 years. I started working for my father, who had a business here in the Metro Detroit area.
Now, you drove a BMW Z8 here. That's not the typical kind of car that you see at the Dream Cruise.
Yeah, well, that happens to be one of my favorites. I'm kind of a two-seat roadster fan, and the Z8 is a special car. The car I have is actually 10 years old, and it's got pretty low mileage on it, and I like to bring it down here. I don't drive it that much, but when I do, I like to really enjoy it on beautiful days like today. But
I also understand, I mean, you like real Detroit iron muscle as well as sophisticated German BMW engineering kind of cars.
Yeah, my first car was a Pontiac Le Mans, which my mother actually sold to me for $800. But my second car was a 1975 Pontiac Trans Am, and it was the Smokey and the Bandit version, the black one with all the gold trimming on it. And I hated to sell that car because I wish I had it today. But it was a fast car, it was a great car, and I dream about owning a car like that again sometime soon.
And you were telling me earlier that Linkenfelter has now made a modification of that car that you're interested in. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, well, I saw it a couple weeks ago at the Concours d'Elegance that Linkenfelter had a Trans Am Retro that they're building on a 2010 Camaro, and it looks pretty cool. It's done in blue and white, and we actually saw some photos of a black one with the gold trim, so I'm actually going to visit them later this month and talk about maybe they can build one for me.
That's great. So how long have you been coming to the Dream Cruise?
Well, I've been coming since it started, which I understand this event now is going on the 15th year of the Dream Cruise, and it draws some 1.5 million people and some 40,000 cars come here from all over the world. So
actually, I think it might be as much as 70 to 80,000.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's hard to know. I mean, I'm not sure anyone's just sitting there keeping track of it all, but it's a lot of cars.
Yeah. Well, we're excited to be here not only as individuals, but also to be based here as TI Automotive. Our world headquarters is in the Metro Detroit area, and TI is an 88-year-old company. In fact, we produce fuel lines for Henry Ford for the Model T.
Is that right?
Yeah, and so our heritage is here in Detroit, and our company today is 15,000 people wide and 126 facilities around the world and six continents. So the heart of Detroit and having such an event in the Motor City, we think, is really exciting.
That's good. So what's your sense of it all? Is the industry coming back? I mean, and obviously in the U.S. with sales where they are right now, coming back is sort of a relative term, but what's your sense of how things are going?
Yeah, well, we see a lot of positive signals, and certainly 2010 is a much better year than 2009. Our sales are up probably between 30 and 35% versus a year ago this time. I think the industry is coming back a lot stronger because we all worked real hard the last 18 to 24 months to reduce costs and find new creative ways to work with our customers. And so those cost reductions, along with a little bit of tailwind on volume, make for a more successful industry. So I'm personally very cautiously optimistic that the industry is heading the right direction and people are starting to make money again. And at the end of the day, this is a great industry with a bright future.
Well, this event, too, has got to build that kind of enthusiasm. I mean, it's got to really warm your heart to see so many people, just regular, everyday people, so into cars.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, being close to cars myself, and every time I get around cars, my blood pressure goes up a few points. It's great to see all the other people around the world and in this country that enjoy cars, and muscle cars in particular, like we're going to see the next few days. And for me to be able to be part of it, this is my hometown in a city that I've had a lot of pleasure working in and living in for several decades. I'm really looking forward to the weekend. Besides, as I see the cars go by, TI Automotive has a TI Automotive product on nearly two-thirds of the cars that are going to be cruising down Woodward this weekend. So we're pretty happy about that. We make fuel systems and brake and fuel lines, and so it's a big day for TI Automotive as well.
You know, you got an enthusiast here where he's not just excited about the cars, he's excited about the fuel lines in those cars.
That's right.
That's great. Well, Bill Kazira, thanks so much for stopping by this Autoline After Hours live at the Woodward Dream Cruise.
Thank you very much, John, and thanks for you and your team putting on such a great event here down in Woodward. Have a great evening.
Cool.
Thank you.
That's great. Thanks for bringing that Z8 as well.
Alrighty,
that's really cool. Before we get to the next segment, I got to thank a lot of people who have made us being here possible. First goes to the Balmoral Center. That's the physical location that we're at right now. Old World Craftsmanship. This is quite a building. It's at Normandy and Woodward and Royal Oak. They've got about 5,000 square feet. I'm telling you, folks, if you need a great place, they've got it here. And there's all kinds of occupants. They've got real estate companies, construction companies. They've got professionals, lawyers, and doctors and the like. Also have to thank our friends at Century 21 Town and Country, also here at the Balmoral Center. You know, without Gary and his team, we could not have made this webcast happen. And we'll be hearing from them later, but a quick thank you to Mercedes-Benz of St. Clair Shores, Michigan. And wait till you see the setup that we've got. They've loaned us a couple of Sprinter vans, which has really made our operations very mobile and a whole lot easier to do. We'll show you what they look like. In fact, Craig, can you pick up the camera? Let me just show these people the control center that we've got here now. But take that with you. And come on, show this. This is the setup that we've got here. Here's Ben that's running everything. And as you can tell, we're kind of proud of all that we've put together here. So, like I said, I want to thank all those folks, but there's still some others who have made this webcast possible, and we want to show you a few words from our sponsors.
Throughout history, man has pondered many things. But in the end, there is only one real question. Who is faster?
Introducing Bridgestone's third-generation run-flat tires with groundbreaking new Bridgestone technology. Current run-flat tires offer peace of mind for consumers, but the added mass and stiffer sidewalls can compromise ride comfort and fuel efficiency. The new third-generation Bridgestone run-flat tires reduce heat and improve performance and ride comfort. Improved ride comfort, lower rolling resistance, and improved wear with the peace of mind and comfort you need.
Can't put my finger on it.
lights calling out my name. There's no mistaking what this day has to say. It whispers in my ear and says, why don't you come out? I'm waiting on you, waiting.
When you have a different perspective on things, you don't end up with just another car.
Waiting, 'cause the time is now.
You end up with a song.
Time is now.
Most car commercials tell you what to think. In this one, people told us what they think about Hyundai. Uncensored.
Nice.
Hey.
I like this one a lot.
It passed my test. I want this car. What kind of car is it?
Hyundai.
Hyundai, like Sunday.
That's right, Hyundai, like Sunday.
You got it. Now get one, like the 2010 Genesis, with Hyundai Assurance, including America's best warranty. Now, for a limited time, you can lease the Genesis for $399 a month at your local Hyundai dealer.
Well, we're back. I'm here with another guy who has a great job description in this business, Mr. Jamie Allison, director of Ford Racing. Jamie's a good friend of the show's, and he's appeared with us before, but it's always a pleasure, Jamie.
Oh, this is a treat being here. I was just telling you, this feels like 1970 all over again.
So give us an update on what's happening in Ford Racing. There's some positive directions going, right, with your new engine and everything?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, with all forms of motorsports, we'll start with NASCAR at the top. And over the last 6 or 7 weeks, there have been some resurgence of the Ford teams. We just landed our first victory, long overdue, a couple weeks ago in Pocono. But we've had a string of second place and third place finishes, so we feel really strong getting into the chase. So I credit a lot of it, obviously, to Roush Fenway and the RPM and the Wood Brothers all working together. And the new motor, right? We're here in Detroit. It's about motors, about horsepower.
The FR9, right?
Yeah, the FR9. And obviously, you know, it's all regulated to a certain specification.
Right.
But with the new motor, with the new architecture, it runs a little cooler, so we're able to actually tape up the car and create a little more downforce, which is what you need at these big tracks.
Yeah, I don't think our viewers realize that how important tape is on these cars, on the speedways, how they change the attitude, but that's a whole nother show. But you had some other news this week, Marcos Ambrose.
Oh, fantastic. The good news keep rolling away in NASCAR. RPM just signed A.J. Allmendinger a couple weeks ago, and we have a three-time supercar champion from Australia, Marcos Ambrose. Joined the RPM team, joined the Ford team. Welcome back, Marcus. And we are very excited because I was at Watkins Glen just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
that was absolutely ran away with the show. He's won there three times in a row, so I think we can check off Watkins Glen.
Well, the duel with Montoya was special. That was good.
Yeah, it was a really great race to see.
He's quite a story. I mean, he was a champion in Australia, but he just was bound and determined to succeed here, and he has gotten to the...
Yeah, and he gives a lot of credit to Dan Davis, the prior director of Ford Racing,
right,
who really just kind of took an interest in him. I mean, he's a three-time champion down in Australia, and the cars over there kind of reminisce of, like, American cars over here, so brought him in, put him in the truck in a nationwide series, and then other opportunities came to him. But he really wanted to come home. We're very excited to bring him back home to Ford. And it'll be a very good season, the next couple of seasons with Marcus.
Great. So what else is happening in Ford Racing?
Well, I tell you, with the Fiesta being launched as a new car at Ford, we just went to the X Games.
Yeah.
Took on the Subarus, the perennial champions in the X Games. And
spanked them.
We spanked them.
You spanked
them. We walked away with 2 gold medals and 2 silver medals. To me, that's pretty stout. And we were the perennial champions last season. So Subaru, I mean, the Fiesta is 2 for 2, so which I think beckons good things for Fiesta here in America.
That's great. And let's see, continued rumors about sports car racing, but Ford's involved and will always be there, but
yep,
just never know what's coming on the horizon.
Well, sports car racing, you know, in America, and Ford is Mustang.
Right.
We have the participation in Grand Am. The Boss 302R, which is the development platform for the street Boss, runs in Grand Am.
Right, right.
It set the pole record, the track record down in Homestead, Miami. Was on pole again a couple of weeks ago in Montreal. So we've been very good in, you know, getting some fast times. But working with Dave and the Mustang team, the program is really a development program. So we've had some teething issue in races.
But we're sorting that out. But the most important thing for us is that to make sure that whatever we learn on the track, Dave and the team are applying and applying for the streetcar. So when you get your streetcar, it truly is born on the track.
That's great. So tell me about your summer driver here.
Well, before I do that, there's one more I got to cover, right?
Because
my proud friends at NHRA about Ford domination. We got five drivers led by John Force, Ashley Force, Robert Height, and obviously Tasca and Wilkerson. There's been 11 races that's been run, and Ford has won 11 out of the... there's been 13 races, and Ford has won 11 out of the 13. So absolute outright just spanking going on there. We're heading into the countdown down in Indianapolis. We'll have five Ford drivers out of the 10 eligible to compete for the chase. So it's a great story. We're looking to have a great ending in NHRA.
All right.
Let's talk about this.
Tell me about your summer driver here.
Well, it is my driver. It is my car. And my wife hates it because every time I pull into the neighborhood, all the kids come out. But cool, really, what this is... This is one of 50 special edition Daytona 500 pace car. So a coupe version of this paced the Daytona 500. We built 50 units, all sold out, obviously. And this car is really made up of Ford Racing performance packs. We basically take a stock Mustang GT, which is a stout car to begin with, 412 horsepower, and the best Mustang ever made. And on top of that, we add a little performance calibration for the performance enthusiast. We lower the car, add a little tuning to the handling, and obviously every Mustang should come with a growl, so we basically come up with a performance exhaust to just kind of wake up the car a little bit. These are things we do in the aftermarket. These are things that Dave and I talk about, and he has to abide by federal and state laws, and I don't. Because it's all aftermarket that consumers can put on after they buy their cars. And so we get a chance to kind of build on a great car and just add a little more performance to it. So anybody could buy the performance modifications. You can go on FordRacing.com and order a power pack or a handling pack and turn your Mustang into a performance car. And the decal package is restricted to the Daytona 500 pace car.
Okay. So... let's get back to racing. Where do you think the future of racing is going? I mean, obviously we're going to have electric assists of some kind in our passenger cars, hybrids. And I know I'm a big proponent of it, and I know that the Ford Motor Company has clearly put their stake in the ground in the direction of environmental responsibility, green. But you believe we can do that in with green racing too, right?
Yeah, I mean... you know, all of us, I look around, a lot of people have probably grown up in the 60s where back in the day, motorsports was actually a platform to go out and innovate and come up, advance technology to make its way into streetcars.
Right.
And, you know...
we've gotten away from that.
We've gotten a little bit away from it, whether it's cars that don't resemble cars that you buy or, you know, series that just don't use mainstream technology. So... what we'd like to see at Ford, I know you're very close to that point of view, is that, you know, we'd like to showcase our new power plants. Obviously, whether it's the 5-liter that we're putting in Grand Am, literally production power plant that's racing that is available in this car, and or our new technology.
EcoBoost,
small displacement, turbocharged applications, potentially in open wheel racing where there's endurance racing and importance of performance and fuel economy. But our chairman, Bill Ford, has said that the future of the automobile is, some form or another, is electrified vehicles.
Right.
Electric-based vehicles, whether it's hybrid or total electric. And I really believe, and I know you agree with me, is that motorsports has a place to help advance that technology.
Absolutely.
So we'd love to see a series out there that adopts rules that allows the innovation of electrification.
Right.
Whether it's heat management, whether it's reducing charge time, whether it's holding charge, so all variety of things that are important for electric vehicles to take hold.
Yeah. So right now, the closest thing to that is the American Le Mans series,
yep,
and then the 24-hour Le Mans. They have the most welcoming rules packages for that. So
yeah,
we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll live to see a hybrid in NASCAR, but the... But I would like to see stock bodywork in NASCAR. I think the old car tomorrow is just not what the fans want to see.
Well, the fans have spoken, and I know there's different points of views how NASCAR's listening on this, but from where we sit, honestly, as a manufacturer, we believe they are listening, and that the experimentation that's going on in Nationwide, whereby the Challenger, something that looks kind of pretty close to that, and a Mustang, that's something that looks close to that, is in Nationwide. And that's the first step. We ultimately want to see a car that looks just like this or just like that running
in
NASCAR. Yep. And I think it's going to take a little bit of time to return to true showroom stock racing. And we're working with NASCAR on that. And that takes a little bit of time.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Jamie, it's always a pleasure to have you with us.
Yep.
And I'm jealous of your daily driver. But we're going to go throw it back to John and see what he's got up by Woodward Avenue.
No, you're going to go video.
Oh, we're going to go video? Okay, we're going to video.
Well, it's a treat. Thank you.
Jamie, thanks.
Absolutely.
Woodward Avenue is Detroit's main drag and the very first cruising strip. From its beginning at the Detroit River, Woodward Avenue follows the pathway of growth from the heart of the city to Pontiac, some 25 miles to the northwest. Along its way, Woodward's wide lanes and grass median connects 9 cities, all in Oakland County. But in particular, it's the 16-mile stretch of Woodward from the northern border of Detroit at 8 Mile Road on up to Orchard Lake Road near Pontiac that people around here have been cruising for decades.
Well, we used to cruise down this way, but we used to race up the other side of Birmingham because there's no buildings, there's no houses, there's very few streets once you pass 15 going the other way. So that used to be Drag Race 7 down there. Of course, anywhere down here was okay, but I preferred to go down there. It was darker, no street lights. Back then, the cops were a lot different than they are today. They used to watch us. And, you know, as long as you didn't act like a fool, they didn't care.
We used to have over 50 drive-ins when I was growing up along Woodward from 8 Mile to Pontiac. And you could cruise all night and never hit the same drive-in.
Technically, the Woodward Avenue Dream Cruise is a single-day event. But what the Woodward Dream Cruise really is tens of thousands of fabulous vehicles filling 16 miles of 8-lane road for pretty much a week straight.
There's a lot of cars. There's more cars than you'll ever see in one place.
Where are all these cars when the Dream Cruise isn't around? Do people hide these things in their backyard? It amazes me that all that stuff comes out of the woodwork.
And any one of 1,000 parking lots on Woodward during the week of Dream Cruise outshines most ordinary car shows. For car buffs, the Woodward Dream Cruise is something that must be seen to believe. And if you want to see it all, you better get here early. A lot of cruising starts as early as the week before Dream Cruise.
Joining me right now is Gary Jankowski. And the reason why I wanted Gary on the show is he's not the CEO of a supplier company. He's not the chief engineer of a muscle car program. He's not the president of the Woodward Dream Cruise organization. Gary is a guy who was a dream cruiser. I mean, he lived the whole thing. When did you first start getting involved in cars?
Well, I got involved in cars actually long before I ever had a driver's license. I had an older brother, and that had some friends, and the front of our house looked like the staging lanes at Detroit Dragway any given Friday, Saturday. We grew up in an era with 409 Chevys, 406 Fords, you know, the early Mopars, and my first trip out Woodward was actually in late 1961. My brother had just taken delivery of a new tri-power Pontiac, and we came out here on a winter's night some 49 years ago, so I've got something to celebrate.
What was the feeling? What was the era like then? I mean, when you think back on it, what really sticks out in your mind?
As a ninth grader, what really stuck in my mind was the mystery behind all this, because I would hear the stories about what was going on out here 6 months before I ever saw any of it. And being a Northwest Detroiter, we'd make the pilgrimage out here from our local drive-in. And when we would turn on off of 8 Mile onto Woodward, it was just like the great white way to us. I mean, we weren't used to 8 lanes of what would become memory lanes eventually. It was just exciting. The first thing you'd see coming north would be Floyd Foreign Chevrolet.
And we were familiar with them because they had a race car that used to run out at Detroit Dragway every week. And we'd always hope to catch a glimpse of the car in the show, because they used to keep the car in the showroom quite often during the week. So you'd start looking around, see if, you know, the Z11's out in the front of the store. You'd continue on, and the first big hot spot we'd hit would be the totem pole. Everybody knows where the totem pole was.
And that was a restaurant, right?
That was a restaurant. Drive-in restaurant, you'd make a loop through there. If you wanted to race someone, you'd stop in front of their car. You kind of give them a nod. Or if you weren't looking for a race, someone could also follow you out onto Woodward, and that was calling you out. So you didn't want to back down. And from there, you'd go find a place to race, usually right on Woodward still.
And it was always for fun and pride? I mean, was there ever money involved in the
people
racing?
People talk about money racing, but if there was that, it came much later in the 60s. We never heard about any money changing hands.
This was just for pride.
Strictly for pride. Stand up for your brand. You know, that's really what it was about. And my brother, being a Pontiac guy, we were cross-town rivals with Royal Pontiac. The guy on the west side, a guy named Bill Sidwell, he used to drive their race car and was fired from Royal Pontiac in about 1960, and that's when Jim Wangers took over the reins for that race car. But we would usually, from the totem pole, a lot of times we'd cross over to Main Street and we'd stop at Royal Pontiac because they were really big on inviting the public in to see what's hot. You know, they were super car tuners. They were engine builders. You could buy anything you want if you had the money Royal Pontiac would provide it for you.
So this was just a cool dealership to hang out at.
Really neat. They used to have open houses annually, and they'd have the race cars on display. It was very exciting for a young kid like me to see all this. We'd come back out on Woodward, and then it was kind of a long stretch from there. You'd get on up to Maple Road here, and then everything would go dark. It was kind of...
That was the country back then.
That was the country, but a good place to race because, yeah, dark, you know. And then when you'd come upon Long Lake Road, the King's Lynn and all the bright lights, you knew where you were getting close to your destination, which was, of course, Ted's Drive-In. And you'd go into Ted's after about a half-hour wait. Cars were notoriously lined up in the right-hand lane. It took about a half-hour to get in there and get a spot, usually. And if you'd probably grab something to eat there and then maybe set something up. The first night I went out Woodward, we raced a 55 Chevy. You know, did it. Just a classic evening. This new Pontiac of my brother's ran into somebody they knew. They called each other out. We went north of Square Lake Road and ran it off. We beat them. I'll say I got my wings that night. The first 100-mile-an-hour roll down Woodward. And then we loop back, do the same thing on the way back. We'd hit Mavericks and a couple of other places right near our location here.
Now, how'd you all get away with it back then? I mean, obviously the cops knew everyone was racing. Was it just that they couldn't patrol everything all the time, or they just sort of turned their heads?
That had a lot to do with it, John. But honestly, it was getting harder and harder to get away with it. As the 60s started coming by, more and more of us baby boomers had cars now. Right out of high school, you either went to college, you either went in the Army, or you went and bought a fast car. I mean, that's what we did. And the Woodward Strip started really getting crowded with very fast cars. And I think it was sheer numbers that it was easier for them to start catching people because there are just more people to catch.
So what's your view of it all now when you come back here 49 years later and you look at what's going on now? What do you think?
Honestly, John, I've never stopped coming out here. I mean, I can honestly remember my first night out here better than I can remember my last night out here. We came out here regularly, probably once a week in the summertime, from about 1961 till about 1970. Excuse me. And you saw that there were changes on the horizon. Not just the police, not just high insurance rates. There was just a trend. It was our whole society, our culture was changing. People were returning from the war in Vietnam with different attitudes. There was a slowing down of it all. A lot of people still out here, which contributed to a lot of the problems. These drive-ins that used to just be a car full of people turned into a drive-in full of people standing around the parking lots. Memorial Park was getting very popular and crowded. And that's when the authorities started saying, we got to start doing something about this. Mm-hmm. They were, eventually, the crowds of people started driving paying customers back out of these establishments. That was a problem. you know, because it just it was kind of scary, you know, with so many people crowding around and things erupted. So,
and fast forward to today, what's your overall view of the Dream Cruise? You like it or no?
I love it. I absolutely love it. Sally and I have been coming out to this since 1995. We usually have a car out here. We've done it many different ways. I've had cars here in shows, at parties. I've come out on a motorcycle, a bicycle. I've walked this strip. I just enjoy all of it. And I especially like the days leading up to Woodward, these evenings like tonight. When you get weather like this, it's just terrific. No,
it's a glorious evening, and there's a lot of cars out there. But Gary, thanks so much for stopping by. It's been great having you on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really enjoying it.
That's great. And what I want to do right now is throw it down to Peter DeLorenzo, who is down right on the foot of Woodward as we speak.
Okay. When we said we were... Okay, when we said we were at the epicenter of the Dream Cruise, we are literally right here on Woodward. About an eighth of a mile south of here is really the center of the universe for this whole thing. So we are as close as we can get. Now, you got to remember, this is a Wednesday evening, 3 days before the actual cruise. The cruise is Saturday. But these crowds start over the weekend, the previous weekend, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And you'll see everything from big block rods to perfectly restored Cadillacs. Anything in the world you want to see, you're going to see here. The good thing about the cruise is it's pretty much run what you brung in the classic sense. This isn't for the... this isn't Pebble Beach. This is whatever you got, whatever you want to dust off from your garage or whatever you worked hard and long all year. We've got a big rat rod community in this town, and one of them just went by. Anything you could possibly imagine you will see on Woodward Avenue. And actually Wednesday, it's good we're here on Wednesday because I think Wednesday is probably one of the key nights. The actual cruise itself, this place is a parking lot. But tonight you can actually see the cars moving and making noise instead of just idling. So it's just a great thing. And you know, some locals sort of object to what's going on, but most people think that, you know, why else would people come, a million people come to Michigan in the middle of summer? So it's become a Dream Cruise week, stretching into probably 10 days of events, and it's really special. But I'm going to bring in two guys with me. Oh, yeah.
Mark Phelan
from the Detroit Free Press, one of our local gurus in the car biz.
How you doing, Mark?
I'm terrific. It's a beautiful sunny day.
It's
a beautiful sunny day for the Dream Cruise. How could I not be terrific?
Yeah, it's just fabulous.
Okay. Oh, look, it's a BMW Z8, the car that proves you can build a $150,000 car and lose money on it.
Yeah, and there's a big black Camaro.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of this event. You never know what you're going to see next.
Yeah, 59.
Yep.
A Stingray Pro Street.
It hurts to do that to a Stingray.
Yeah,
it does.
57 Chevy.
More or less.
And then you always get the couple from Dubuque who never got the memo that this was going on, and they're driving to their relative's house and can't for the life of them figure out what's going on Woodward. Always funny to see.
It's a public road, so I got some sympathy with them, but it's not like Woodward is the only way to get north and south in Oakland County.
No.
I mean, if you find this annoying, Coolidge Highway, Southfield Freeway, there are options.
Yeah.
And everybody who's out here for the old cars and the exotics is having a great time. That's the real beauty of this day. Everybody has a story to tell, and everybody's got a smile on their face.
Yeah. So it's... You know, throughout all the tough times this area has gone through and this industry, the Dream Cruise has actually kind of held it together for a lot of people, I think.
I think so. I mean, last year it gave people a chance to get together and remember why they cared about this business.
You don't see that every day. Shelby.
Yeah. And this year, it's sort of, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel. I've been talking to a lot of people who feel like this is the other bookend to a year of misery.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see so many current production cars that fit in and have the performance and the looks. I mean, 5 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case.
Yeah. You see some of the wildest stuff, though.
Yeah.
It's always good.
Yeah. Well, and I love the exotic kind of one-off things that people did in their backyard. I mean, there's somewhere out here, there's a psychedelic BMW Isetta with a Land Rover V8. And what every kind of car. There is somebody out there who loves it, you know?
Well, there's our Armed Forces tribute, and there's a... Well,
oh boy.
There's a 300 SL
now,
Roadster with Rudge wheels.
That one we might genuflect as it goes by.
Yeah, that is just... I'm one of the few who preferred the Roadster over the Gullwing. I just thought the Roadster was just sweet.
It is elegance. And it is so much more elegant than the new, you know, AMG Gullwing, I think. I mean,
the SLS.
Exactly.
SLS, yeah.
That car shows how they captured lightning in a bottle. The first SL.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, in fact, earlier today, I was at a gathering of GM designers down at the Northwood Center. They brought all of their, you know, personal cars and their project cars, and that's, you know, that gives you a chance to see the people who do this for a living. Actually, they don't just sell cars; they love them. Nice set of wheels.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, the viewers of this Autoline After Hours, I think one thing we've done is introduce them to the people in this business who work on this stuff every day. And I think the viewers realize that these guys and women are hardcore enthusiasts, and many of them have their own stuff in the garage that they work on. And when you see them and meet them and you realize the passion and commitment they have to what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, how many people in their professional lives get to build the things that they played with as toys when they were kids? I mean, it's just... And look at it. I mean, this is a moving feast.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get better between, you know, now and by Saturday. You know, nobody will be able to move.
Yeah, well,
get here early, get your lawn chair out, and ride the bus.
Yeah.
If you want to see all of it on Saturday, ride the bus.
Yeah.
That's the way to get around, and it's free.
Yeah, and this Wednesday, like I said, is my favorite because it's pretty much everything you want. Okay, we're going to take a video break right now and go to an interview with part two of our interview with Robert Genet.
Joining me in the studio right now is Robert Genet, who has written this book, Woodward Avenue, Cruising the Legendary Strip. Great to have you here in the studio with me, Robert.
Glad to be here.
So how many people did you interview to do this book?
Oh, gosh. At least 25 that I felt were important. And then I went back also. Jim Wangers doesn't live too far from me in San Diego, and we've become friends over the years. And I interviewed him 3 times, actually, for this, because he's always got a new story. And then I interviewed somebody here in Detroit, and he said, well, Wangers was a sandbagger. So I went back to Wangers, and I said, you know, the word was, you were a sandbagger. And his comment was, well, yeah. He says, I wanted to beat somebody, but I didn't want to beat him badly. I wanted to beat him bad enough that they'd come and buy a Pontiac. I thought, that's a really good one. I like that. You know, so.
Yeah, keep them wanting to race you if they think maybe they can beat you.
Yeah. If you beat them real bad, he says, you embarrass them, then they won't come buy a Pontiac.
I'm sure you got some pretty good stories. You got a favorite?
Well, there's a friend of mine, Bob Karakashian, who still has cars and races them, and he was talking about going and calling somebody out at a drive-in, something you would do when you go look for
like
somebody.
Like gunslingers, right?
Gunslingers, looking... American Graffiti, and this one guy was, you know, bad-mouthing him. So it's stuff you see in the movies like American Graffiti, and guess what? It really did happen. And Bob's a good friend. He's I've shot his cars many times, and... So it was fun to be able to. He didn't have a picture of the car, of course, the old car. He's got a picture of his current cars, so that was a good one. And there's several like that where Al Maynard had a 55 Chevy four-door with a 365 Corvette engine, and, you know, had a blue fender on a gold body. Everybody laughed at it, and the car was just faster than hell. So, so, you know, those kind of things are always fun to...
Well, I've been looking through the book, and I've got to sit down and really read it, but there's a tremendous amount of history and photos in this thing. If people are interested, where can they find the book?
CarTech Publisher has their website, Amazon.com, if you want to order it online, Borders, Barnes & Noble, and in Detroit AutoZone, AutoZone Bookstore as well.
That's terrific. Well, Robert Janay, thanks so much for coming in and telling us all about how you got this book out.
Oh, thank you, John. Thanks. Glad to be here.
We're back at the cruise, and I'm joined by Mr. Jim Hall of 2953 Analytics.
Hiya, Peter.
Good to have you, Jim. Jim is the man who knew too much, and he's one of the most respected industry analysts in the business, and he's also a consummate car freak of incredible proportions. So we're just going to hang and talk like we normally do off camera and look at what we see. And I think you guys will enjoy that.
The last great Elante, because there was only one Elante, just went by in the North Star car.
Oh.
Which was really, it was really interesting because the North Star Elante, I think, they had everything right except the top.
Right.
It still took two people to put the top up.
That top was abysmal.
You know, and there's the car that's supposed to come, wow, 61, looking good.
Yeah.
You know, that was that car. It was that transitional car where you could tell that they wanted to do more with the Corvette, but they just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And we missed a great KB Lincoln. Did you see that? I think it's a 37.
Yeah, I
missed
that.
Wow. Oh, my God. The mix of cars you get here is still so weird. The things I haven't seen that I keep waiting to see are the Australian supercars. And there's some in the States, so it's only a matter of time or else I blink.
It's only a matter of time. We'll see it.
Now, there's interesting. A hardtop, 1939-1940 Ford. You think they did a torch to do that?
It's a 5.0, nice and black, simple and black.
Have you driven it, haven't you?
Yeah.
The 5-liter?
Sweet.
It transforms the car, because
right.
The Mustang was neat, but...
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Although, you know what? There are more Corvettes running around now. The Stingray, first-generation Stingray with side pipes than they actually built.
Yeah, I prefer them without the side pipes.
The interesting thing is people think that's the off-road exhaust. It was an option, and it's not. The off-road exhaust was out the back, but it had no irritating resonators. And apparently, in a coupe, it was really tough to live with. But what cars, I'll ask you one, what are the cars you never see here that should be here?
You know, I don't know. I've seen some of the most amazing things. What would you say? Oh, there's a...
Yeah. Wow. Here's the question. Where are the GM roadable street concept cars where they got a car like the X400? Where are those cars now, and why aren't they here?
I don't know. I was one of the few people... Oh, there's a rat rod.
Oh, yeah.
We have a big rat rod community in this town.
I like the ones with the chicken wire floors. Have you seen those?
Yeah.
Where you're driving and you look down and you see the ground.
My favorite, this Corvair. I had a 69. I loved it.
You know, the interesting thing about the Corvair, for the time, it was an amazing car. The steering was light. It was responsive. You drive one now, and you have to first remember how bad everything else was. Because you drive it now, it's sort of like, I don't get it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it always was a very, very attractive car. And the first Corvair, the 60, let's face it, that actually caused a design shockwave that went around the world. It influenced the design of Fiats. It influenced the design of NSUs, cars that became Audi eventually. These things all looked like shrunken Corvairs.
Yeah.
And the irony is that the Corvair was considered a small car at the time. You look at the dimensions now, it's a mid-sized car.
Yeah, it's a mid-sized car. You know, that you bring up that XP400. I was one of the few who got to ride in that. We had it for the weekend. The XP400, for the viewers who don't know, was a custom Pontiac that Bill Mitchell did. And he stuffed a 671 GMC blower on a Mickey Thompson prepared 421 V8. And it was electric blue. It was the first use of a hard tonneau.
It went around the show circuit, but it was also one of the cars that Mitchell drove, right? So it did double duty.
Yeah, we had it for a weekend. And it had, as Ken Escherbach, Bill Mitchell's personal mechanic, told us, the motor was set up for drag racing, and we went through 21 quarts of oil because of the way the rings were set on the thing. And we'd have five guys in it, and the thing would chirp the tires, not chirp, but, you know, spin the tires in just about every gear. And we spent the whole weekend going to gas stations and looking at the expressions of the kids' faces when we said, we need to check the oil, and we opened the hood.
And you just start pouring oil in.
Yeah, well, just the blower and everything. They'd be like, golly, what do you got?
Was it an inline blower? Or, okay, I wonder, because it didn't have a big hood bulge, did it? It just sort of a...
It had some vents on the hood, but...
Right, but it wasn't done crazy. Have you figured out what this thing is here? It's gone by about 9,000 times.
It's a Volkswagen-powered kid car thing.
It's just that it looks like it was made in a high school metal shop. Yeah. You know, and maybe it was. It could have been a project for maybe Seaholm or something.
So, is the MKT growing on you or not?
The car's growing on me from about the center of the front wheel arch back. The grill, it's a classic example. I think they didn't know when to lift the pan when they were designing it. So, you know, you want these big grills, we'll do it. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's a point at which you just kind of tailor it a bit.
Yeah.
And I saw a sketch of a front end somebody did where they narrowed the vertical section of the grill. Looked a lot nicer. I mean...
It drives great.
I know. That's a great long-distance cruising vehicle.
Absolutely.
You know, two or four people in that thing, pack it up, just go.
Yeah.
It's comfortable. It's the stuff that a lot of companies are doing really well now. Cruisers, and let's face it, that's what this country, we drive cars that way. We don't have a real Autobahn, and we don't have a lot of people tearing around in the Alps, because the Alps don't get this far east.
67.
Yep. That actually, of the...
69.
The 69s, I never really cared for them. The 68, 69, 70s, because it was like the car turned into a cross between a Lotus 7 and a Saturn 5. It was, in its own way, less... I think it was a retrograde step from a packaging standpoint from the previous car. Previous car had more room in it.
Well, the original Stingray and the original Shark were two quintessential GM concepts. I don't think the Mako Shark 2... You know, the Manta Ray.
Yep.
It never hit. The impact just wasn't there.
Well, for one thing, it was a car that the final Corvette version, because they didn't do the V'd rear window, because they did an inset rear window. Every time I saw the car, it looked like it was trying to channel a Series 2 GTO.
Yeah.
Now, there's nothing wrong with stealing from Ferrari. And that's what's weird, because the first time I saw a 599 in person, I walked up to it from about the rear three-quarter, and it made me think of a Corvette.
Right.
And it's like something's wrong when you come as you see a Ferrari and you think of a Corvette. It's supposed to be the other way around, but nice car. What's really intriguing here is the totally out of balance, I guess is the best way to put it, representation of Plymouth of these things.
Yeah.
This is when Plymouth meant something. And, you know, you see Plymouths and people go, oh, yeah, Plymouth, I forgot all about them.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Oh, now there is a blower. I don't know how the guy sees out of that. And that's the kind of blower where it takes 265 horsepower to drive the blower. So you start doing the math, and, yeah, it's going to be faster, but how much faster?
Yeah, you see Plymouths and you see Pontiacs here.
Yep.
Pontiac rules here. They used to rule in the back in the day. So.
Well, yeah, and of course, the end of Woodward is in Pontiac,
yeah.
Which is where they engineered most of those cars.
And I got to work on Pontiac in my ad career, which was a real privilege. So
at an agency that was also on Woodward on the way up to Pontiac.
Exactly.
See,
there's another Corvair convertible.
Yeah, I've seen second-generation Corvairs today. I've seen about six of them, and I have yet to see a first-generation Corvair here. And I know they're running around, but... This is one of those things. The mix of cars here is such that if you blink, you see nothing but Mercury Sables and things like Fusions, or you see things like...
Or Camry, or the...
Well, actually, that's an LS, or ES.
Oh,
there, gee, a Breezeway Mercury.
Me.
Now, there is a car.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
That was back when you would not confuse a Mercury for any other car. They were the only guys to have the guts to do that.
Bon Beige.
El Dino Camino.
Fawn beige Corvette.
And that was with a fawn beige interior, so it's a full matching.
Yeah.
The Cove, the contrast Cove, that one didn't need. Monochrome, yeah. That's a sweet car.
Yeah.
Jewel blue, also, 61 only color, was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
But what are you going to see here in 25 years?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, is it the new Taurus? Not so much.
I don't think so.
I think it's going to be, what turns us on right now? The new Boss Mustang, the ZR1 Corvette.
I think any Corvette probably has a free pass. I mean, because it still is. Although, I don't know if you know, they're airing a commercial for Corvette now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is the first time since, what, 1963?
Well, actually, there Corvette. Was in the launch of the new car in 84, they ran the spot.
But I'm saying that was the last Corvette ad.
Yeah.
And now they got a Corvette, and it's got I think it's a ZR1, but it does this wonderful sort of acceleration where it's sideways It's a great commercial.
Yeah, my buddy Jeff Swart shot that, actually.
Jeff does video? Now that's
Well, no,
big.
He's a commercial director. That's where he's doing all his stuff, has for years.
Cool.
That's, Corvair.
That's a big car. Not only that, that's the one with the Martin Landau package.
Yeah.
It was very collectible.
Oh, there's a nice 5.0 there.
Yeah, that gray, if that gray were non-metallic, they would have serious guts to do that car. But the red interior is pretty okay. And that Thunderbird over there with skirts is absolutely horrible.
Oh, well, that's nasty.
Yeah, it's just awful.
It's just nasty.
What amazes me is replica pace cars. There was a time when there would have been almost wall-to-wall, and now they're getting kind of rare.
Well, they're asking us. We need to pay homage to our sponsors, so we're going to go to a commercial, but we'll be back.
Cool.
Can't put my finger on it, but it's calling out my name. There's no mistaking what this day has to say. It whispers in my ear and says, why don't you come out? I'm waiting on you, waiting.
When you have a different perspective on things, you don't end up with just another car.
Waiting, 'cause the time is now.
You end up with a song.
Introducing Bridgestone's third-generation run-flat tires with groundbreaking new Bridgestone technology. Current run-flat tires offer peace of mind for consumers, but the added mass and stiffer sidewalls can compromise ride comfort and fuel efficiency. The new third-generation Bridgestone run-flat tires reduce heat and improve performance and ride comfort. Improved ride comfort, lower rolling resistance, and improved wear with the peace of mind and comfort you need.
Most car commercials tell you what to think. In this one, people told us what they think about Hyundai. Uncensored.
Nice.
Hey.
I like this one a lot.
It passed my test. I want this car. What kind of car is it?
Hyundai.
Hyundai, like Sunday.
That's right, Hyundai, like Sunday.
You got it. Now get one, like the 2010 Genesis, with Hyundai Assurance, including America's best warranty. Now, for a limited time, you can lease the Genesis for $399 a month at your local Hyundai dealer.
Throughout history, man has pondered many things. But in the end, there is only one real question. Who is faster?
How apropos coming out of a Mopar commercial than to have the president and CEO of the Mopar brand with me right now, Pietro Gorlier. Pietro, thanks so much for coming up here for Autoline After Hours.
Thank you, John, for inviting me. It's exciting to be here.
Have you ever seen anything like the Dream Cruise before?
No, actually, I mean, this is really something amazing for an European coming here and getting involved in this kind of enthusiasm for cars, etc. And actually, it's so nice to see this connected with the Mopar brand, because really it's where our heritage comes from.
For those who don't know or, you know, need to be brought up to speed, because we're talking about the new Chrysler here, what is the Mopar brand? What are you doing differently with it right now than would have been, just say, different from a few years ago?
Well, first of all, let me tell you that we are very busy. With 16 new cars to be launched in the next few months, I mean, we are really busy.
Wait a minute. 16, you said?
Yeah, I mean, Chrysler is gonna launch 16 new models heavy renovation of the current models in the next few months.
So we're going to see a tremendous total changeover in the Chrysler lineup.
Yeah, absolutely, as we stated.
I don't think people know that. You know, we know that the Grand Cherokee is out there, but that's an astonishing figure, 16 new vehicles.
Well, actually, we have been declaring that since the beginning when we presented our plan. So this is going to happen. And as Mopar being in charge of everything after the sales, we are really busy in being sure that our customer will take all the attention that they need with the new models.
So tell us, what are you doing differently with the Mopar brand? What's your plan to get this much more visible than what's going on now?
Well, first of all, I think the first new is that now, today, all the after-sales activities are under the Mopar umbrella. So, I mean, this is very different from the past. In the past, Mopar was about, above all, parts and performance and races. Today, we are leveraging that heritage, but we are taking care of every activity after the sale. So service and customer care, too.
So you're really branching out in terms of what you want to do with the Mopar brand.
Yeah, we want to really guarantee the best possible customer experience after a purchase of a car.
So give us some examples. What are you doing differently?
Well, let us talk, for instance, about having a quick service in our dealership. I mean, well, you know the story. I already told you once. I mean,
but tell the audience.
Yeah, this is the country that invented the 724. So we want to have that experience to our customer and all our dealership.
You mean 7 days a week, 24 hours a day?
Yes, exactly. Getting close to that, obviously, is probably difficult to get to 24 hours, but. I mean, really expanding the service hours, expanding Saturday and weekend openings, and having express lane where you can get an oil change, standard maintenance done in 15 minutes. That is one of the main target. And then, I mean, to take care of the customers, at the beginning of this year, we launched a customer branded toll-free number for each of our brands, where you can connect directly not with the corporation but with your brand.
Wow. So, I mean, you're taking this concept of customer service to a totally different level than anything that's been done before at Mopar.
Yeah, that is the point. I mean, customers are looking for a peace of mind. They want to just step into a dealership, having someone taking care of their needs, and going out with the car ready to hit the road.
So this is interesting because this is a part of Mopar that I guess I hadn't really put my mind around. To me, Mopar was always parts, that you would go and buy parts, performance parts, and we'll get into some of that later in this interview, but you're really talking about the entire dealership experience.
Yeah, I mean, we have 73 years of history. I mean, something that probably not all the people
the
know.
The Mopar brand?
Mopar brand is as a... In 2010, 73 years.
I had no idea. I had no idea it was that.
And if you look at our history, in the first half of our life, we were above all what you said, parts, performance. But then we started developing a second life, taking care of service, working with dealers to expand our service capacity, taking care of parts availability, but also taking care of service tools. For instance, just a few weeks ago, we were the first one in the industry to launch a smartphone application for owner informations. So today you can go on the app store and download the Grand Cherokee owner information for free, and have all your owner information in your smartphone. And we will expand that to BlackBerry and to other smartphones in few weeks.
So you're bringing new technology into
new technology.
How you serve
customers.
We
were the first one to launch the Flow TV standard in our cars. So you can get ESPN, CNN live in your car with Flow TV. I mean, really a bunch of industry first.
How do you get your dealers on board with this? Because it's one thing for you, Pietro, running Mopar, to say, this is what we're going to do. How do you get the dealers to really get on board with these ideas?
Well, first of all, you can imagine our 2,300 dealers, how excited they are with all these new models coming out. And that is the point that is really generated excitement. And I think they completely understand the concept of bringing customer care to a next level. We launched, at the beginning of this year, new dealer standards. We have a tremendous success in having the dealers engaged in improving the performance. So I'm really confident that soon we will have really results for the customers.
Pietro, how are you going to measure this? I mean, I imagine on one way it's easy. It's dollars and cents. Are you making a profit or no? But how are you really going to measure? How are you going to keep track of this level of customer satisfaction?
We have specific KPIs and
system. And what's KPI?
Well, we make surveys with customers. We inquire about all the topics related to the service experience and the sales experience that they had, and we rank this experience by brand, but by dealer, by state, and then we have a discussion with the dealers about the trend, and we are already seeing improvements.
I imagine you are. Can you give us some sort of idea? Because up to now, as we know, Chrysler has been living with the products. Now you've got these 16 new ones coming, but have you been able to increase customer satisfaction up to now?
Well, I mean, obviously the customer satisfaction is a process that must be, consolidated. But I can tell you that we have already seen in the trend of this indicator a clear positive direction, we are really satisfied about what we obviously we don't publish all the data, but we are really satisfied with what we are seeing today.
And I can imagine it will only get better with 16 new and refreshed models coming.
I mean, that is also a commitment with new customers. We are going to attract in our dealerships totally new customers interested in our new models. So this is why we want to set the standards to a level that is matching the expectations of new customers. And we will get there. We are already getting there.
That's great to hear. You know, we ought to let our viewers see some of the products that you're talking about here. And, in fact, we want to bring in your director of sales and marketing for Mopar as well, Jim Sassarossi.
Hi, Jim.
Come on in.
Hi, John.
Let's see. And Pietro, here, I can do this a bit. But, Jim, tell us a little bit about the car that we're looking at here and what makes it so special.
Well, on my point of view, one of the things that make it special is actually the person right next to me, Pietro Gorley. It's a fascinating story.
I didn't pay it.
No, it's about the new culture within our business, within our company. It's just amazing. In the middle of the night, Pietro sent off to Ralph Giles an email about Dodge puts the heart into a vehicle and Mopar puts in the soul. And just a few months later, a team worked together around the clock and came out with the Chrysler Group first, a Mopar Challenger, and it's just been fascinating and so fun to watch.
Pietro, what gave you the idea? Why did you want to have a Mopar? Can take it.
Well, actually, I mean, I've been studying. I mean, when I came here, I mean, I understood that there was something special with the Mopar brand, so I started studying. They gave me a bunch of books. If you get in my office, you have a bunch of books on the history of muscle cars. And so I said, well, everyone is calling some of our cars Mopar. No, Mopar Challenge is typical, talking about cars of the 70s. Why we don't try to go to a next level? And for the first time in the history of Chrysler, we come out with a car out from the factory with a Mopar logo on and fully, as we say, Moparized. So that was the idea. So I started talking with Ralph Gies, that is the president of Dodge, and say, what do you think about that? I mean, Ralph is a fanatic for car.
Yes, he is.
And never said, well, that's a great idea. Let us do something special. So the two teams started working together, and this is the result, and we are really proud of this.
Talk us through what you've done a bit on this car.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, this car will come only in this color, in black.
And for those who are only getting the podcast, this is almost near metal flake kind of a finish. It's not a true metal flake, though, is it? Or, Jim, how would you describe this?
Nope, it's the same black that we use in our vehicle today, but especially with the sun shining out of it, it's drawn a lot of attention with even some people have saw a little bit of blue in the color with the sparkles coming out.
I did think that I saw blue. There is no blue in this. It's just black.
I think
black.
It's the Mopar blue.
The sunshine done brought it out.
but what you get, you can choose between three different stripes. One is in Mopar blue, the other in red or in silver. So this is the only personalization that a customer can do.
And again, these are side graphics running down the front fender's doors into the rear.
That is recalling one of the typical stripes of our heritage vehicles. Then you get the Mopar logo on the shield in front of the car.
And you said that's the first time that's ever been on a Chrysler car.
The first time
there
is a car.
In 72 years.
Actually, we created this brand new logo exactly for this application. We didn't have one.
So I have to ask you, Pietro, if it's gone on one car, can it go on others?
Well, it's Mopar 10, so maybe, 10 is 2010.
I hear some continuity coming.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
what else?
And then you get these gloss black wheels forged. These are unique for this car. We have created this car with the Mopar logo in the middle.
And let me add again, for anybody who's listening to the podcast now, these wheels really accentuate the car. There's a lot, slotted mags, I guess I'd call them, with big open areas, so you can really see the brakes and everything. makes the car look a whole lot more light and nimble just by putting different wheels on it.
Ralph is used to say that this car has a sinister look, all in black. You get the Mopar logo on the fuel cover door, and again a new feature for Mopar, and obviously the name, the Mopar 10, on the back of the car. This is talking about the outside of the car, but then you get inside, and you have these leather seats, catkin leather seats, with the Mopar logo on the side and a unique Challenger Mopar 10 name. But the trick is that the stitching is coming with the same color of the stripe that you have chosen for the exterior. And the same is happening for the steering wheel, with the stitching and the blue insertion that are coming, matching the interior.
So this is very custom built.
Yes,
I mean, to match the exterior striping with the stitching in the seats, with the stitching on the steering wheel.
We wanted to give the customer a unique experience with this car. It's going to be. We are going to build only 500 units for the U.S. for this car, and I mean, it's a limited edition. Pistol grip handle for the manual version, T handle of the shift for the automatic, with the Mopar logo on. A lot of Mopar logo, as you can see.
And this manual gear shift lever has got sort of a carbon fiber look to it.
Yeah, carbon fiber. This is actually recalling one of our heritage handles that you can find on the Challenger of the 70s. So this is the interior, but I think there is something even more important under the hood. Oh, so okay. I let Jim to get under the hood.
Jim, come on, take us there.
Thank you, Pietro. Okay, I'll pop the hood right here. Now, one of the items before we get under the hood,
let's talk about what's on top of the hood.
Yep. First of all, we do have the vintage hood pins, and I already took the hood pins out, and they actually have the black chrome on it and Mopar embossed on both of them. And then we are excited about the hood scoop. This is actually introducing our new vented hood scoop. It's fully
functional. So this is functional. This isn't just there for looks.
Right, and it's not just for if we're debuting it with the Mopar 10, but for our many Challenger customers, they can go to any Dodge dealer and stop by and pick up a hood to upgrade their current Challenger, as well as a lot of the accessories on the vehicle. So it is fully functional, and
okay,
I'll show
now
you
let's pop
on the way
hood.
Through. So as we get under the hood, we were talking about it on the outside, right under on the inside of the hood, we have our scoop bringing the air right down into our Mopar cold air intake, allowing it to breathe better.
And talk about this whole intake system looks totally tricked. This is definitely not what you get in the base version of the car.
It does not come in the base version of the car. Now, with the base version, we do love that we get to start with a 5.7-liter V8 Hemi, and then we get to add the cold air intake, and it grabs a lot of attention. And then at the end of the engine compartment, you can see our strut tower brace for the front. We also have strut tower braces for the rear, which really helps the handling. The base of the vehicle that we use on this is an RT Challenger, and we put the Super Track Pack suspension on it, so it's got beefier sway bar, bushings, and shocks, and then you add it with the strut tower braces, it just handles fantastic.
And the strut tower brace looks beautiful. I mean, this is what, you know, it all looks...
real attention to detail.
The caps on top really to finish it off nicely.
Chrome billet to finish it off very smoothly and elegant.
So let's talk some numbers. What do you got here coming out of this engine? What can you tell me legally?
I'll let the boss take that.
Yeah, Pietro's going to take that one. Go ahead, Pietro.
I mean, obviously, this is not touching the engine. We have, we have to stay aligned to the homologation of the car, etc. Anyway, you can extract additional power and additional handling from these doors. Let me put it in this way.
That's a very nice way to put it.
Better, and this vending system has proved to be really a great way of having a better venting of the engine. Yeah.
So you're building 500 of these, equipped as it is. But how do you, are you building to order so that people can order the stripes? Are you building batches? How are you going to do this?
I mean, we allow the dealers to put orders in. And I mean, it's interesting to say that, I mean, we launched this car a couple of months ago just with a sketch and a webcast, and we put on our website, stating that we're 500 units. We got 1,000 orders from dealers in less than 1 week. So that is the point.
And, so you double your sales in a week.
Yeah. Well, we don't. We are going to limit the product.
Only going to do 500.
That is a 500 unit. It must be. I mean, this 500 customer must have one of the unique 500 the Mopar 10.
I admire your discipline of not just going out and building 1,000. Yeah.
And what is in addition to what you've seen, I mean, this car will come with an owner kit, personalized with the name of the customer, a book telling the story of this car, a sketch of the chief designer Mark Trossel that actually sketched this car at the beginning with the signature of the designer, some merchandising. A specific document with the VIN and the history of this specific car, and some other surprises for the customer.
What kind of surprises? Can you tell us?
Well, there will be some merchandising to go with that.
That's great. And what's the cost on the car? What's the price on this?
Well, I leave it to Jim to make the sales pitch.
Okay.
Because he likes to do.
Oh, you got to love to do the sales pitch. It's the RT comes in about $33,000 with the package here. With an automatic, it's $38,000. With the manual, it's an additional $1,000. And we just love the price point because it puts it above the RT and below the SRT at $43,000. And
actually, for something that custom, 500 only, that's a pretty attractive price.
It's
Pietro wants the mic back.
This is why I left the pitch to Jim, because I mean, this car is giving really a lot for the cost, and I mean, it's a sort of first edition of a Mopar car, so we wanted to be aligned with the expectation of our customers, both in terms of the stuff that we put into the car, but I mean, stay tuned for 2011.
But this is very interesting because you're really taking this and making it another brand in the Chrysler stable. You've got Jeep, you've got Ram, you've got Dodge, you've got Chrysler, and now you've got Mopar too, right?
Well, we are already a brand. I mean, we were a brand, and actually I think one of the main point of the new Chrysler was really to put the Mopar brand at the same level of the other brands. Our main mission is still to add value to the other brands. I mean, we take care of all the after-sales experience. We need to be sure that when a customer is buying one of our cars, is getting not only a great car, as we used to say, but also getting a great service. So this is our main mission. But we cannot avoid simply to walk our heritage and coming out with something like this for our customers.
Well, then the natural question is, how about Mopar products for some of the other brands?
Well, we are working on that. Obviously, the association, we need to be, to clear, the association with Dutch is a sort of automatic association. And it's sort of no-brainer. I mean, I think you say no-brainer.
Right.
It really, you don't need, you put the Mopar badge, is still a challenge if no one is complaining. We are working on the other brands because we would like to have a different interpretation of each brand. And so stay tuned.
I can't wait to see what you guys are doing, because I got to tell you, this looks really good. And it's impressive, like I said, that you're sticking to the plan and you're only going to do 500 of these things. That's going to drive the value of a car like this.
Absolutely. That was the point. And it's going to be one of our clear principles. I mean, deliver what we promise.
That's great. Pietro Gorlie, thanks so much for coming on Autoline After.
Thank you very much.
And
it's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
Jim Cesarossi, great having you guys both up here telling us all about what's happening at Mopar, and especially this Mopar Challenger. I love it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again.
Thanks.
Very good. Now I'm not sure where we're going to in all of this. We're going back down to Woodward Avenue and to Peter DeLorenzo.
We're back here on Woodward Avenue, and joining me is Mr. Scott Burgess from the Detroit News. Scott?
Peter, thank you for having me here. It's quite a night. It cruises in full force already.
Yeah, it's it just keeps getting hotter out here. And, you know, we've been standing here talking for about 10 minutes. And so what's your take on the Dream Cruise? Will it survive into the future?
Absolutely. There's no reason why it wouldn't. The cruise is a celebration of a lot more than just the car. We were talking earlier, and we were trying to figure out how many man hours have been spent on all the vehicles that are here. And, I mean, it's untold millions of hours of people that they've just worked on these cars, and they love them. And this cruise will be around for a long time.
Yeah. I know Jim Hall and I were talking earlier, what's going to be cruising 25 years from now? And I've given it some thought. I don't think it's going to be a Volt, because if we have a silent cruise, it'll be...
Well, there will be a little bit of a difference. Yeah. People may have to store some gasoline in their garage, you know, just for to cruise on Woodward, because there is going to be some of those things happening as well. But right now, the cars that are coming out, you can see them right now. Everything from all of the Mustangs that are out and available, and Camaros and Challengers, and who knows what else they're going to be bringing out in the coming years.
Yeah, there's some going by right now. Yeah, it's heating up. Some of the bigger inch, big cubic inch V8 stuff's coming out. They always come out a little later. Make some serious noise. So tell me, you were just telling me you drove an original Mustang from back in the day. You should know Scott reviews cars all the time for the news. So how was that?
If there was no nostalgia tied to the Mustang, it would be an absolutely miserable ride. The Mustang I drove, it was a 66 Mustang, and it had an aftermarket 302 in it, pushing about 200 horsepower on the V8 that it had. No power steering, no power brakes, no air conditioning. The only gauge that worked out of the five on the front was the speedometer. No one knows if it was really that close. It's unreal how far cars have advanced. If you were to look at a 2011 Mustang, the V6 has 305 horsepower, and it's got electric power steering. And the comfort that comes with it, it's really nice. And, you know, I understand that these are fun and nostalgic and great vehicles, but there's a lot of people right now really, really hot because there is no air conditioning in the car.
Well, we just had some serious cubic inch stuff go by, and so it was a big black Camaro, I think. We couldn't have a more perfect night either.
Peter, you were saying you used to have a early 70s Camaro, like the one across the street, right?
Yeah, I had a 73 Z28, white with black stripes, stick. It was fun, but that was right at the end. That was right when the whole performance car thing went dormant for a while. That's when it really started to get not very much fun, right after that car.
Well, the 80s was a little bit of a dark age, I think, for a lot of the, especially the muscle cars. And but I mean, over the last couple of years, it's been really exciting with all three, the big threes, muscle cars returning. And I've been surprised at how many new cars we've seen out here that are Challengers and Camaros and Mustangs. It's really nice to see.
Yeah. Well, I think the low point back then was, I think, a Z28 Camaro back at the low point of that era had something like 140 horsepower or something. It was just pretty dismal. But, you know, we do live, in fact, in the golden age of the automobile in terms of, you know, what you can buy these days. And even in the most affordable cars, the technology is staggering, and what we're able to drive and the performance of these vehicles today would humiliate any race car from not too far back. And these guys are about to grenade their that thing for our benefit, hopefully.
Well, squealing tires is illegal along Woodward, and you can get an expensive ticket. We would also catch it on film if they did it right now. But you're absolutely right about the modern-day car. What you can do in a modern-day car is unreal. Everything from the all-wheel drive systems. I recently drove a GTR, and you can take a 90-degree corner at 40 miles an hour, and the car won't slide at all. I'm driving a Camaro SS right now. It's unreal what the acceleration. I mean, it's more than 400 horsepower sitting under your hood, and none of these cars out here have that kind of horsepower. I mean, there are some with the giant blowers on them or something like that, but the amount of power that you have, and then you add to that the luxury that you get with these vehicles. I mean, I recently drove that Jaguar XJ. It massaged me as I drove down Woodward Avenue, and you just can't beat that kind of stuff.
I think, you know, today, when you drive the older cars, I think the most striking thing and how far we've come along is the dynamics of the old cars compared to the new cars. I mean, we're driving cars with spectacular chassis dynamics, and you get in the old cars and the steering is horrifically slow. The brakes are sort of there. You know, you got to hold the thing and go in a straight line. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we live in the business. We're so critical of the minute details of these new cars. But in general, they are so good. And the performance and, relatively speaking, the economy, fuel economy, it's just amazing. And it keeps going. And so that's, we'll have the cruise. Boy, there's a nice SJ. Yeah, really nice. That was that classic color back then. So tell me more about that XJ.
It's brand new now, and the interior package on it is phenomenal. And that came with the supercharged engine, so yeah. that as well. I mean, the performance on it is unreal. Your acceleration is great, and it's just a fun car. But you know, at the same time, we can say how much better the cars are today than these, but you can work on these. You can do a lot of stuff with these. When you look back on those cars, the image gets a little fuzzy and gets a little brighter. And there's nothing wrong with that either.
Well, Scott, thank you for joining us. Scott Burgess, Detroit News, and we're going to throw it back up to John somewhere.
Joining me right now is Aaron Bragman from IHS Automotive, analyst that a lot of our viewers will know from Autoline Detroit. You've been on that show a number of times.
I have.
And it's interesting. Here I got an analyst. Let's analyze
muscle cars. They're fantastic. And we've really seen a kind of rebirth of the muscle car just in the last couple of years. This year especially, you've seen something new coming from Ford with the new Mustang.
In fact, we got the brand new Boss 302 right here.
The iconic 5-liter has made a comeback. But these new muscle cars are a little bit different in that they're fuel efficient now. You can have 300 horsepower. It's a V6, but you can get 30 miles per gallon.
Which
again.
Is astonishing.
It is.
That
is
astonishing.
Even if you just think 10 years ago, would you have found a muscle car that could get 30 miles per gallon?
I would not have ever thought it possible.
I mean, even a Corvette, V8 Corvette, gets mid-20s in terms of its highway fuel economy. That's fantastic.
Actually, I've gotten 30 miles to the gallon in a Vette as well.
You're not driving it right then, John.
No, this is it was not the speed limit. Let's just put it that way.
Well, that's good.
But what's this do for automakers? I mean, you know, why should they go and do these things? Yeah, it's great for us gearheads who just slobber all over these things. The business case, can they justify it?
You can to some extent. These are really image vehicles in many ways. They're not going to sell hundreds of thousands of these things. They're not your average family car, but they're halo vehicles. This is what the enthusiasts get excited about. This is what they have things like Dream Cruise are generated from cars like this. And so people come out, they enjoy these things, they buy them, they get into trouble with them, the insurance rates goes up, but everybody has a good time with it. And these are the things that they can sell a few of that are going to sell a lot more Ford Taurus, a lot more Chevy Malibu, a lot more of the new Dodge Avengers, things like that.
What do you make of what Pietro Gorlier is making with the Mopar brand, trying to bring that back and now badging this Mopar Challenger?
Yeah.
What, as an analyst again, not as an enthusiast.
I understand.
Because I know you're going to like it as an enthusiast, but as an analyst, what do you think?
It makes sense. I mean, you see these kinds of performance brands all across the industry. You see BMW with the M, you see Mercedes-Benz has AMG, you've got Cadillac has the V-Series. They've got to make something like this into its own separate brand. To the extent that Chrysler is doing it, is a little bit more than what a lot of people have done, but I mean, you look at the thing, it's beautiful. Might need one or two more Mopar badges on it, though. I think there's only, 16 or 17 on that thing, but No, but this is the kind of thing that generates a little extra money for dealers, too. If they can get these kinds of accessory packages together and these things that people can go and order, that generates a lot of good cash for dealers.
And now let's look at the retro part of it as you look out on Woodward Avenue and you see all these great classic cars going in. Again, and I'm asking from an analyst standpoint, is that good for the industry?
Absolutely. I mean, these are the kinds of enthusiast things that happen that really generate a lot of interest, keep people interested. This is a little bit biased here because this is Detroit. This is the Motor City. This is where really a lot of these people come to. But there's no other event like this on the planet. This is really such a unique event. And it's the stuff like this. It's stuff like Viper. It's stuff like Challenger that are going to be there another 20, 30 years from now, and people who are like our kids or my kids are going to be coming back to it and seeing it.
Well, I couldn't have put it better myself. And Aaron Bragman from IHS Automotive, thanks for stopping by and giving us an analyst view of what's going on.
My pleasure, John.
Okay, and real good. Now I'm throwing it back to Peter, who's with some of the classic cars that we've got up here.
Hi, we're back, and I'm here with a gentleman with another great job description in this business. Mr. Maury Callum, head of Ford of the Americas Design, welcome.
Welcome, thank you very much. Great to be here.
Yeah, and
lovely evening.
It is fabulous evening, and you brought an interesting new vehicle from Ford. A lot riding on this beautiful new Explorer. What can you tell us about it?
Well, this is the new Explorer. This is the 2011 Explorer. Really, it's really we were really reinventing not just the SUV but also the Explorer, and I think from a design viewpoint we're really happy with how this vehicle's turned out. Really trying to get the SUV cues right in terms of the stance and the overall feeling of the vehicle.
And what in particular do you, I know the surface detailing is pretty important on this vehicle. You're seeing a lot of things going on. Starting with the front and then going down the side.
The front, you can see sort of our latest interpretation of our three-bar grille.
Yeah.
Really an evolution of where we brought Taurus today. But in the same, even in the body side section, we pulled the body sides in, pulled the wheels out, giving the car a really good stance. But one of the really strong signatures we really like is that the Explorers have always historically had the body color C-pillar.
Right.
So we've really accentuated that by blacking out all the other pillars. So you really see this really strong signature from a distance and close-up, and you really recognize this vehicle as an Explorer.
Yeah, and of course, It's no longer on the body on frame. It's now the unibody structure.
But we feel it's still as capable as SUV as ever.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, is the packaging is better?
Packaging, there's better shoulder room inside and better headroom. So there's a better package than the outgoing Explorer, yes.
Yeah. Interesting wheels you got.
Yeah, these are the optional 20-inch wheels. This is a limited edition car you're seeing here. But I think also, you know, it's great to look at the exterior of the car, but one of the major stories for us is actually the interior of the car also.
Yeah.
I think that's a really strong story for the interior of the car.
Well, yeah, that is an interesting interpretation of the three bar. It's on this...
And the Limited, obviously, she says the body color, the other version's got get a silver
the
gray,
so you
identify the Limited version.
So you ready to show us the interior, Craig?
Okay. And get in it. Please get in. This is our latest design for the interior.
Yeah, letting him get the camera on.
Okay,
we
think one of the best interiors we've done, really, in terms of both craftsmanship but also design detailing. The design detailing is very strong. Things such as the real metal speaker grille and the tweeters and the upper piece with the wraparound viewpoint of the vehicle, too.
Yeah.
But this also includes our new My Ford Touch. So they're really the next generation of what we call our HMI
system.
And
I don't think the viewers out there realize how advanced this
My Ford Touch is. It's really a new step forward. You get into the car, you push the button, hopefully all this works, and you can see My Ford Touch illuminate. You have information screens on the instrumentation, left-hand side for driver, the right-hand side for the more sort of communal use, such as the areas on the My Ford Touch, which is a four-corner system: phone, navigation, climate control, and audio. And this is controlled not only by touch, but also by the steering wheel controls and also by voice. So you can it's hands on the wheel, eyes on the road, as we say. And this is also showing the Sony audio system that comes with the Limited vehicle.
Yeah,
also.
And you know, when you play with the system, it's really amazing.
And it really is. We think it's really the next step forward, and really technology really being advertised both from a design perspective, but also from the actual technology perspective of it. So, and I think that's what people are expecting, and also the connectivity you get with the media hub level, so in terms of being able to connect your iPod, your phone, etc.,
right,
etc.
Right. It's quite a step up from the previous generation. That's
yeah, we're
sure.
we're really happy with the design. But you know, it's still coming in price wise lower than the outgoing model. So we think it's a really really great step up, a real move forward into the 21st century, as we say. And where really SUVs are going, and where we think the customer wants the SUV to go, also.
Yeah. Plus, it's the Explorer name recognition is something like 95%.
Yeah, I mean, when people think of Ford, the three nameplates they think of is F-Series, Mustang, and then Explorer. Yeah. And the recognition is, we're not sure who the, I think it's 96%, we're not sure who the 4% of the people in America have not heard of Explorer are, but they're there somewhere.
Well, so this is what you do during the day, but yeah, you did bring something here.
Yeah, I brought it. I'm picking one of these up in the late winter, but this is the car I'll be driving this hour. This is my 34 Ford three-window coupe.
Now, how did you come across this?
I've been looking for one of these for a while, and I'm actually building a 32 Roadster, but I realized that I'll probably be retired before I get to drive that thing, so I wanted to enjoy one, so I bought this a couple of months ago in California, actually, yeah. So it's a great car. 50 Mercury flathead in it, a chopped 3 inches roof, so it's a good-looking car, we think. So,
that's really sweet. So how did you find it?
It was actually through one of these enthusiast internet sites.
Yeah.
Interior still needs a little bit of work done, as you can see. I'll get rid of the Corvette seats and put a Ford seat in there, I think. But it's great fun to drive. It's not quite as easy to drive as Explorer, I have to admit, especially in traffic that we have today.
Interesting color.
It's still in primer. I haven't decided whether to keep it in primer or not. But it's great fun to drive.
Yeah. So what else? What else have you been driving lately?
I think you saw the Mustang earlier. I've also got a Mustang 5-liter, and that's the best Mustang I've ever had. It's a great car, and I really, really enjoy driving
really
that car.
Is.
So it's a great car to look at, but it's also a fantastic car to drive, and the engine is beautiful, real, really great engine.
Yeah.
I encourage anyone to drive that car, because it really is really the best Mustang, apart from, of course, the Boss.
We've been
busy this year generally. I mean, obviously we're showing the Explorer, but that's launching at the end of the year. The Mustang we showed at Pebble Beach, we've obviously launched the Fiesta, new Super Duty.
The
Focus at the end of the year, new engines in F-Series. So there's a lot going on with us.
Yeah,
we've been pretty busy.
Product cadence at Ford is really amazing and starting to really gain momentum.
It's great to be busy. It's hard work sometimes. But
yeah,
it's good
you
to
guys
be busy,
are very busy, but you seem to be delivering. So
well, thanks.
It's really we're glad to have you
Thank
here
you.
Tonight.
Nice to see you again.
And I think the viewers appreciate your perspectives on both the old Ford and the new Ford.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
We're heading for the commercial land right now.
Introducing Bridgestone's third generation run flat tires with groundbreaking new Bridgestone technology. Current run flat tires offer peace of mind for consumers, but the added mass and stiffer sidewalls can compromise ride comfort and fuel efficiency. The new third generation Bridgestone run flat tires reduce heat and improve performance and ride comfort. Improved ride comfort, lower rolling resistance, and improved wear, with the peace of mind and comfort you need.
Can't put my finger on it, but it's calling out my name. There's no mistaking what this day has to say. It whispers in my ear and says, why don't you come out? I'm waiting on you, waiting.
When you have a different perspective on things, you don't end up with just another car. You end up with a song.
Throughout history, man has pondered many things. But in the end, there is only one real question. Who is faster?
Most car commercials tell you what to think. In this one, people told us what they think about Hyundai. Uncensored.
Nice.
Hey.
I like this one a lot.
It passed my test. I want this car. What kind of car is it?
Hyundai, like Sunday.
That's right, Hyundai, like Sunday.
You got it. Now get one, like the 2010 Genesis, with Hyundai Assurance, including America's best warranty. Now, for a limited time, you can lease the Genesis for $399 a month at your local Hyundai dealer.
Joining me right now is Mike Holleran, the president and CEO, or president of North America for Saab Cars.
You got it, John.
And, you know, a lot of people have said, why would Saab come to an event like the Woodward Dream Cruise? But, of course, we're in Royal Oak, and now your headquarters are here in Royal Oak.
Yeah, this is our hometown. I mean, this is where we live now in North America, and we're just really pleased to be here. We've got a brand-new car that we're introducing, the all-new 9.5, and so this is a great place for us to be.
And we'll get into the car, because we got to talk about this thing. It is so cool having this thing here. I've only seen it in pictures so far, but let's talk a little bit about Saab right now. I mean, you guys are sort of like the Lazarus Company coming back from the dead here.
Yeah, a little bit. We are back. It's time to put Saab back on your list. We've got cars at the dealerships now. Our dealerships are open for sales and service. And this car that we're going to talk about in just a second, the brand new 9.5, we're offloading 300 cars right now as we speak. They're on their way to the dealerships. So people have a wide selection of Saabs. Come on down to the dealership and buy one.
You've got to be really excited. I mean, you know, Saab has been such an iconic brand, but it's been short on the kind of product that it needs. Looks like you're getting that right now.
Yeah, we really are, John. This is a really game changer for us. If you look at the product portfolio for Saab over the next couple of years, this vehicle that we're introducing today will be our oldest vehicle in just 2.5 years. Never in the history of Saab have we been in this position. It's unprecedented for us, and we're so happy.
And can you talk a little bit about the kinds of cars that you've got coming in addition to this one?
Yeah, great question. Of course, the 9.5 is coming now in sedan. We'll have an aero version, and we'll have a base version as well, coming in here in just the next couple of weeks. That'll be followed by the 9.4X, a premium crossover. That'll be available in the U.S. In April of 2011. So really, what's that? It's about 8 months from now, 9 months from now. That'll be followed by the 9.5 wagon, which is going to be just beautiful. One of the most beautiful wagon executions I've ever seen. And that'll be in the summer of 2011. That'll be followed by the all-new 2013 9.3, which will be in dealerships in 2012.
Unbelievable. So, I mean, you're going to have a full lineup here in just a couple of years?
Absolutely. And we'd like to add to that lineup even further. So we're looking at maybe a smaller premium Saab as well. And we're very excited about that. And I know we've talked about that before.
We have. We talked about the Saab 9.2, which I think would be so cool if you guys can pull that off, because that is truly one of the iconic cars, not just of Saab, but I would say of almost all any car of any time.
Absolutely, and it's a great opportunity to bring back Saab, you know, the way that we remember Saab, and in a segment I think that's just really hot right now, and I think we can do very well there.
Okay, now we got to talk about the 9.5, because
great.
When I first saw the pictures of this thing much earlier in this year, I was knocked out. I've told you, and I'll say it not just because you're here, this has got to be the best looking Saab I've seen in at least 20 years.
Well thanks, John. I absolutely agree with you. It has a lot of heritage going back to the 900 Turbo. So for the Saab fans out there, they understand exactly what I'm talking about. But it also has a very clean, organic Swedish line, and you can see it in all of the lines of the car. You've got the clamshell roof, which is very reminiscent of Saab, and that goes back to the rear sail panel.
Let's move along.
Yeah, let's walk back here.
Come on over here where we've
got
the
camera. You
can
see the sail panel, and you know, when you look along this roof line, you see the old 900 Turbo in there coming back to this panel back here, which is very reminiscent of the 900 Turbo. We also have the hockey stick feature that you see on all Saabs, as well as you move to the front, you'll see that you have this beautiful three-port grille, very reminiscent of aircraft heritage, and you know, has that feeling of design. You also see the headlamps. This is an ice block treatment, and you'll notice that there's a green tonality to it, which is very reminiscent of Swedish glass. So we've tried to bring the Swedish heritage back
in the
car.
It almost is a smoke to look, but it doesn't look smoky.
Yeah, it doesn't look smoky. It has like a bluish-green look to it. And then you'll find that feature if you look at the rear-view mirrors. You pick up that feature.
You pick up the same blue in the turn signal built into
exactly.
The rear-view
mirror. And you'll see that in the back as well, along all the way across the back of the car, very wide expanse of LED lighting, which you'll also get LED lighting up in the front as well. But the lighting on this vehicle is just spectacular.
So you got to see it at night, not just in the daylight light we're looking at.
In the light, in the dark, it looks great.
What I love, too, is let's just start at the front end here, is very prominent. I guess I would call it a Saab graphic, obviously, and yet very modernized kind of view of it.
Yeah, it's a little bit of modern meets retro. This is an old design from going back into the 50s, but we've brought it back forward, and of course it's a much bolder execution than what you saw. And then it's across our three-port grille, which is a traditional Saab look. So yeah, we're very pleased about that, and what it has behind it is a 2.8-liter V6 twin-scroll turbo we're very proud of, 300 horsepower, with a whole lot of get up and go. Has cross-wheel drive in it, so you've got a great all-wheel drive powertrain system here. And even better, just a month from now, we'll introduce the 2-liter turbo that also has a twin-scroll turbo as well. It's a direct ignition engine, and guess what? Over 30 miles a gallon, unheard of in this segment. When you're thinking about our competitors, the A6, the 5 Series, the E-Class, no one even comes close.
You know, what I like too is when you look down from above on the car, a lot of plan view in the front end here, you know, and it's something that Saab's always done. It's always because of its aircraft heritage. Got so much to do with aerodynamics.
Absolutely. Very deep grille. We have a 0.28 drag coefficient, which is extremely slippery.
That's very good.
Yeah, very good. And so that contributes to great gas mileage as well. And so you're going to be able to buy a premium luxury sedan and make a very responsible choice. And with the 2-liter model, we're starting under $40,000. Again, unheard of in this segment. So very proud of the brand new car.
You know what I like about this, too? You got to stand out on the side. But Saab's often had gigantic overhang front and rear. And this car, even though it's got some front overhang because it is a front-wheel drive car, when you stand back and look at it from the side, the proportions just look so good on this thing. It just goes together well.
Yeah, the designers really did a great job. They've integrated everything, and it's very, what I mentioned earlier, an organic look. Very clean, sweeping body, not a lot of clutter, but still some accent points that make the car look very premium. So we're very pleased with the way the execution came out, and we just have been showing the car all over the country. We're at Concours last weekend, and I got to tell you, the car was so well received. And I think
at Pebble Beach,
and maybe not where you would normally see Saab, but a great opportunity with our new corporate partner and owner, Spyker, to show off two really cool vehicles. And we were just mobbed all day long. I was shaking hands and talking to customers.
Excellent. You know, let's go back to the design here. One thing that I like is the stanchion for the rearview mirror, how it picks up the body color underneath, and it just brings this sweep of the hood all the way down into the side of the car and down the side of
the
car.
John, I'm really glad you brought that up because it does give a lot of continuity through here because of the split here. But also what it does is it also accentuates the aircraft look of the canopy. We have the wraparound glass feature that when you have the windows up, this looks like one solid piece with the blacked out pillars and then the blacked out top of the rearview mirror. So it's a really nice integration and one that everybody seems to pick up. They're like, wow, what is that? That looks really cool.
It does. And of course, I love the wheels on this, which, you know, they almost look like the fins in a turbine or a turbocharger or, you know, a jet.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, what we did there is, if you remember, the concept vehicle for this vehicle was the Aero X, and we really are taking a lot of the design elements from the Aero X. You can see it in the hood feature lines. Clearly, the turbofan wheels were a big part of the Aero X, and we brought those out. Everybody was asking for them, and we had to do it. So it's a 19-inch execution that we think is just really great and unusual in the market.
Very beautifully done. I also like on this car, of course, everybody these days has to have a fender vent on the front fender. What I like is that you guys have got this accent, but it's almost down at the rocker. So, I mean, yeah, you got the fender vent, but done in a way that nobody else has done it.
Yeah, a little bit different look, and it's very, it fits right into the rocker molding down low. So, when you look at the vehicle, the execution of the design is really good. And when you look inside the vehicle, I mean, you see some really pretty amazing things from us. Of course, we put the start-stop button in the center. Wouldn't be a real Saab without it.
You better do that.
And you can see the console just has this swoop that goes up. It feels like an aircraft cockpit feel. That's what we're trying to do. Of course, the seats are just outstanding seats. And the wheel has a very much a feel of being in control, driver in control. And all the technology is here. You've got lane departure warning. You've got heads-up display. You've got everything that you'd want in a premium luxury sedan in this vehicle. Infotainment system, world-class Harman Kardon, which all of our guys wanted, a Harman Kardon stereo system, and we're going to deliver it to them. So,
and I can tell anybody who's listening on the podcast and can't see it right now, when you see the interior of this 9.5, you'll instantly recognize that it's a Saab. It could not be anything else, and yet it's totally modern. I mean, this is a totally new interpretation of what a Saab.
It's a really great execution, very Saab-like in its design, and it's uncluttered, again, very organic, and I think that customers will feel like they really are in control, and that's really what I think people ask for in a performance sedan, that you feel in control, you feel safe behind the wheel, and it's in a comfortable environment where you get a great infotainment system.
And they're coming off the boat as we speak.
Yeah, we're offloading them right now. We're just so happy to be back. And, we're hoping that everybody will come down and just take a look. I think they'll be surprised at the new Saab.
Mike Colleran, thanks so much for coming on and bringing us up to speed. You all being here with Saab in North America in Royal Oak, Michigan, home of the Woodward Dream Cruise, and introducing this 9.5 here. It's excellent.
John, thanks for having us.
Well, I'm here with yet another guy with a great job description in this business, Mr. Jector, who's the chief engineer of Corvette.
I sure do. I got the best job.
Yeah, welcome.
An engineer can I have?
Now, you have to understand, technically only four, well, we were just talking, only five people have been chief engineer of the Corvette, starting with Zora Duntoff. So Taj has a great job, and he's more than aware of the legacy that he has and to deal with and to nurture and take forward. So it's a
huge,
real honor,
huge responsibility, huge honor, and something I take very seriously. It's really one of the most valuable brands inside GM, one of the most recognized automotive nameplates around the world.
Absolutely.
Been making Corvettes for almost 60 years and hope to make them for at least 60 more.
And working on new iterations of them at all times. So tell us about
Absolutely.
This one.
Every year there's something new. For 2011, we turned our attention, our focus, to the Z06. 2 years ago, we brought out the ZR1, kind of a world-beating supercar.
Yeah.
Last year, we brought out the Grand Sport, which brought the wide-bodied look and chassis performance to the base coupe and convertible. It's been extremely popular. The Z06 has been essentially unchanged since 2006 when it came out. I actually bought one. I like the car so much. But we've kind of let it carry on unchanged all that time. So this year we really focused a lot of attention on it. There's two, I guess the first thing I'll say is the base tires, the Goodyear tires, are new from the ground up. They're also available on some models of the Grand Sport, mm-hmm. and they are spectacular performers, cornering at well over 1G. This car has the ULZ package, we call it. Actually, it's a Z07. This has two packages on it. And it's kind of a response to customer input from us. Since we brought out the Z06 and then the ZR1, people looked at the larger wheels and tires, an inch larger in diameter on the front and rear, extra width, and then most importantly, stuffing those tires full of some of the largest brakes. In all of Autoland.
Yeah, well, the light is hitting you can see the brake rotors.
Almost 16 inches in diameter stuffed inside a 19-inch wheel.
That's so just awesome.
Just amazing brakes. And so customers have been asking us for quite a while, you got this hardware on the shelf, why can't I get it on the Z06, which is the lightest car, normally aspirated, super fast throttle response, also the best balance, perfect 50-50 weight distribution. Why not put those overkill brakes on the lightest car and give us the most capable track package possible? And so that's what this is. You can check the box on your Z06 and get that whole ZR1 chassis custom-tuned for the weight, balance, and performance of this car.
ULZ box?
That's actually the Z07.
Okay.
ULZ is the carbon option. You see the second part of it, which includes the front splitter. That's carbon fiber, although it's not clear-coated like the ZR1.
Yeah.
But it has all the reinforcement behind it. It's the same aerodynamically as the ZR1. It's just painted in a gloss black. Then it has the rocker extensions. These are also good for downforce. You create high pressure in front of this baffle here, and that actually pushes down along the carbon fiber rocker extension. And then the roof, you see, it's black to match, and that indicates it's carbon too. So you're taking weight out of the car and taking it weight out high, so you're lowering the center of gravity. So these two in combination really give you the strongest Z06 track package.
So this is the second highest performance Corvette you can get after the ZR1, right?
Absolutely. And for some, they'd say it's the purest track machine, lap after lap, day after day. It comes pretty close. It's surprisingly close
to the ZR1. Is that rear spoiler?
That's to balance the front splitter. That's right off the ZR1 as well.
Yeah, that's right off the ZR1.
And then to introduce these option packages, we put them both together and then did what we call the Carbon Edition. So it's all this content. It also has a special all-carbon hood, inner and outer. So it's like the ZR1. When you open the hood, you see the carbon underneath. It doesn't have the window. It's just a very thin carbon skin outer, so it's the lightest hood we know how to make. Helps the weight distribution, helps the vehicle mass even more. That's the special edition, the carbon version, which is coming out in October. We're only making 500 of those. It comes with all that content and then a lot of interior upgrades. We do suede insert on the seats and virtually everything you touch in the car. So everything from the shift knob, the shift boot, the steering wheel, the grips on the doors, the pads on the doors. So everything your body touches will now be kind of an ultra suede fabric, which is real grippy. Right. So it also helps you with the performance on track.
Okay. So you've been working on these now, and you're working, and you're already in a 2011, 2012... So you're working on the C7, that's no secret.
Yes, we've publicly announced that since the bankruptcy, after we came out of bankruptcy last year, with approval from the U.S. Treasury Department, Corvette figures into General Motors' future plans, obviously Chevrolet's future plans. It's really too valuable a brand, and it really has, it's kind of a bread and butter car, even though it's a very exciting car. It's also a bread and butter car, so
it's essential to General Motors.
It's essential to General Motors, and it makes money. We make enough money to justify continue doing it, even if it contributed nothing else, never mind the technology development, the rub-off on all the other products, the addition of traffic into the Chevrolet showroom, you know, burnishing the GM and Chevrolet brand around the world. There's a lot of other benefits, but nuts and bolts, it's basically a good business to be in.
And of course, GM just announced today that the IPO is in the works, and that will get the company out from under this government involvement. And so you're positioning Corvette for that day, I think.
It just makes sense. It's a great business to be in, whether the taxpayers own the company or whether stockholders publicly hold the company. It wouldn't make any difference. It's just the right thing to do for GM and Chevrolet.
So going forward, the notion of environmental responsibility and green, I'm sure you're addressing that in the next generation cars.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't hear much about Corvette in the whole discussion on global warming and all the environment for a couple of reasons. One, it gets very good fuel economy. Owners report to me getting over 30 miles per gallon regularly. The only car we sell that carries any gas guzzler tax is the ZR1. It's very low volume. But cars like this, Z06, don't pay a gas guzzler tax. The Grand Sport we talked about, the car you can buy that corners well over a G, goes 0 to 60 under 4 seconds, and get 26 miles per gallon on the highway. There's no other car that has those stats. So the car is already pretty good, but you can count on it. As we think about CAFE and our place in General Motors, and, you know, we've been almost 60 years developing lightweight materials, so you can count on Corvette to continue to push that state of the art. How do you continue to improve performance and improve economy at the same time?
So it'd be fair to say that the new car, like all of General Motors' cars, you don't have to single out Corvette, will be lighter than the current car.
They will be absolutely as light as they can be.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can generalize and say all GM cars are going to be lighter. It depends on the content. There's lots of new safety regulations.
That's true.
That tend to add weight to the car. There's customer demand for infotainment functions.
Yeah.
All this stuff that adds mass to the vehicle. And in many ways, quite honestly, fuel economy saving technology quite often adds mass
yes.
to the vehicle. It may be counterintuitive. Saving weight is one way to save fuel, but there's plenty of other ways to save fuel, and quite often that means additional content and therefore additional mass. So it's a balance you have to strike. What's the best overall performance and fuel economy set of hardware?
And you've also sort of gone on the record saying that the basic configuration of the current car will continue for the C7.
Well, I'd be happy to tell you everything you want to know about C7 in another show. We'll have to reschedule that
okay.
for some time. It'll be sometime in the future, and we'll call you.
All right. Well, but you, one of your head engineering guys did say that the mid-engine discussion has to end because that's not the C7.
You can count on GM to have a lot of voices and a lot of opinions. I'm not going to confirm or deny any of the rumors, so okay. you didn't hear it from me one way or the other.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you coming by.
My pleasure.
We're Corvette fans here. Of course, you know, in the U.S., Corvettes, Mustangs, it's hard not to be fans of those cars, and we've got two of the best here tonight. So
absolutely.
Appreciate you stopping by.
Anybody driving a Corvette every day is a dream cruise.
Right. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Are we
Thanks
gone?
For having me.
We're going back to John now.
Joining me right now is Dave Dykstra from Mercedes-Benz of St. Clair Shores, and great having you here as part of the Autoline After Hours Woodward Dream Cruise Edition.
Thanks a lot, John. I really appreciate being here.
Now, a lot of people may wonder, okay, what do we got? A Mercedes-Benz dealer of St. Clair Shores on the show. The reason is we've got two Sprinter vans here that have been an enormous aid for us doing this live webcast. The one behind us, the red one here, for those of you who have been with us since the very beginning of the show, that's our control room. We're doing all our switching, making sure everything gets out over the internet. In this one, we've got food and water and soda pop for the crew. But what blew me away here, Dave, is to learn that St. Clair Shores Mercedes-Benz is the only distributor in the state of Michigan for Sprinter vans.
That's right. That's right. We've had this franchise for a while, about 6 months now. We're up and rolling, servicing Sprinters that were sold before, of course, and selling the new ones. And we've had some great success with it. A lot of tradespeople getting the vans, and just getting the low cost of operation to run the vehicle has been a big sell for us. And you can stand up in it. It makes it a great work tool. It's wonderful.
It's an amazing van. I had one to test drive a few years back, and what just blew me away was going down the freeway 70 miles an hour, I was getting 26 miles to the gallon. And these are not small vehicles. These are big honking vans here. I was, of course, diesel. That's why I got such good fuel economy.
Right. Yeah, and with that turbo diesel, you get a lot of pickup, too. It has a lot of torque to the engine, so if you need to pass, merge on the expressway, things like that, it performs well, and you have some confidence when you're driving. You feel real good about it, and the cost of ownership is real low, so it's just a perfect tool for people to use for the long haul. We have some expediters that have gotten the vehicle, and like we were talking earlier before we got on here, that you almost forget that it's as big as it is because it drives so nicely.
It absolutely does. I mean, you know, for as long as it is, it's got a pretty decent turning radius to it. It's pretty easy to maneuver these things.
Matter of fact, it's funny you mentioned about maneuverability. We have one customer of ours. She has a large family. She has 8 children, maybe 10. If you're watching this, you'll know who you are. She got a blue one. It has the wraparound windows and a big air conditioner on top. And she drives it around. They live on a farm. And she drives around. She went to stand, as she told me, and drew a crowd around her. And people are saying, what is that? Is that your work truck or whatever? She goes, no, this is a family van. And people were all excited. They said, can we come in? Can we hop in there and see it and look it all around? She says, oh, yeah, absolutely. And she just draws a crowd wherever she goes. And, of course, she always tells them what great service she gets from us over at our place, and we appreciate that too. But it's a lot of fun. Everyone that we show the vehicle to, they get as excited as we do, as we are about the vehicle, and it's a great addition to the Mercedes line. We're happy to have it.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for coming up, and great having your help here in providing us these two vans to be able to use while we're doing this webcast. This has been excellent.
It's our pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Joining me right now is Donnie Langdon, and I'm looking down here because I love the title that you give yourself, Head Chick in Charge. And you are the head chick in charge of a magazine that you started called Throttle Gals. And what I love about it is somebody starting a magazine these days, that's a challenge. I mean, everyone's got to think, what, you're going into print? Are you crazy?
I've gotten that a lot. So that's why we're both print and we're on the web. So we try to span both generations so that we have the print magazine for people that like to hold it and feel the paper. And we have the PDF version online as well so people can flip through it on their, you know, their e-card computer software.
So, Donnie, tell us about the magazine. What's the format? What's it all about? Why did you start this?
I started a magazine because there's a lot of women in the industry that don't get featured in other magazines because they're male-dominated magazines. And it is a male-dominated industry. And basically, I was one of those women that felt like I wasn't getting featured in any magazines, so I found more people like me, and we just...
And you're a gearhead. You're totally into cars.
I have to paint my nails purple so you don't see the grease stains. Yes.
And motorcycles, too, I should add.
Yes. My hot rod is a 74 Sportster, so that's my baby. And the format, it's not like a nuts and bolts magazine. It is a relational magazine, so it's more about the history of the woman in her car, the history of the woman about why she likes cars, why she likes bikes, and, you know, like, what are we thinking about doing a print magazine, except that there isn't one out there like ours, so.
Okay, so you get the idea to do this magazine, you see a need for it, and you yourself are a great example of the kind of need you see. You want to have articles about women really building these cars, customizing these cars, but how did you start the magazine? I mean, that's the hardest step of all, is not coming up with the idea, but actually starting it.
Well, I have an in there. I own a print shop, so... Owning a print shop helps to print a magazine. Yeah, my whole background's in printing and graphic design. And so my grandfather was a printer, so I got brought up in printing. And so I knew the ins and outs of printing. I've been physically running presses since I was 17 years old. And so I understand production. I understand the world of printing. And I have the contacts and just started making phone calls and...
The rest is history.
The rest is history.
So how long have you been doing it? How long is this history?
We only launched in January, so we're only 3 issues in. But we've been promoting for about a year and a half, and we are getting ready to launch our 4th issue coming out in October. And, you know, we've spanned the bikes for the first 2 issues. We've had like a chopper in the first issue for the cover. Then we had a Bonneville Salt Flats bike on the 2nd issue. Then we ran a Bug-Eyed Sprite with Casey Coker on the 3rd. And the 4th issue is going to be a traditional hot rod.
So all over the map. You don't care. As long as it's product, if it's cars, you're going to...
If it's her baby and it's, you know, gasoline-powered, it's... Actually, if it's gasoline-powered and some things that aren't. You got a couple of things in the works that really aren't gasoline-powered, but they're hot rods and they're, you know... We got younger generations. We have a feature coming up on a couple of twin 16-year-old lawnmower racers. And we have a little 6-year-old girl I interviewed today that has her own, what she calls a tot rod. It's a 30, I think it's a 32 Ford T-bucket that's this big. It's got a 6.5 horsepower Briggs & Stratton engine, and she knows all about it, and she understands how it works, and... It's got gears that she has to shift through, and a girl can drive the car.
And you called it a tot rod?
She calls it a tot rod.
That is hilarious.
It is great. It'll be an issue 4.
So for anybody watching or listening right now, how can they get the magazine?
They can go to throttlegals.com, or they can pick it up at a select... There's a few stores that carry us, but mainly the internet is the best way, or car shows that we're at.
That's good to know. Well, Donnie, thanks so much for stopping up. I love it from two standpoints. I love the fact that you're an entrepreneur and just wanted to go out and do this and did it. And I think it's cool the way that you're bringing women into all this, but doing it on the relationship aspect of it. I think that's brilliant. No one's ever done that.
Well, and we're trying to span to women that are total gearheads, but the women that are interested in gearheads. So we have like an entry-level tech, and we have tech tips, and we're going to come out with glossary terms because there's girls that are interested and just don't know how to get into it, too. So we're trying to span the gap.
That's great. Again, thanks so much for coming up on Autoline After Hours at the Woodward Dream, Chris.
Thank you.
Good. And now I'll throw it to the control room, and I think we're going to get together for a discussion here of what we've seen here tonight. Well, we're back here. This is sort of our wrap-up powwow. But, Peter, it's good to see you, man. The whole damn show, and you and I have been all running around doing different things.
I know, but I think it seemed to hang together, and I hope all their viewers liked it.
I hope they did, too. I mean, we tried a lot here tonight. Chip Drake, my producer.
Chip did really, a great
oh,
job.
My God.
We should thank all the crew by name.
They are heroes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Carmen Erickson, Craig Cole, Seamus McElroy, Ben Sanders, Stacy Eamon.
Without them, we wouldn't be here.
We wouldn't be here, right. Yeah, we get to have all the fun. But so looks like you had some pretty good interviews there, too.
I got to talk with all the guys with the great job descriptions in that business.
Those guys do have the best jobs in the biz.
Yeah.
So, Tom, what have you seen here at the Dream Cruise that stands out in your mind?
The Boss 302, first time I've seen it. It's gorgeous.
There, hold that up there.
And also, this is actually the first time I've seen the Explorer. I'm kind of surprised at how fetching it is. It's a good-looking vehicle. Well, it doesn't look like the last Explorer that I saw.
Not at all. And the Boss 302, I mean, they flew that. It got here today from California, so we were fortunate that Ford brought it for us to see, because it's pretty spectacular.
If somebody told you guys 10 years ago that there would be a horsepower war involving pony cars, we would have said, no, forget it, not a chance. And it's bigger now than it was last year. In the face of CAFE, this is a great time to actually be interested in cars.
Well, these are the glory days.
Well, not only that, the 5.0 is making, what, 26 horsepower on the, or 26 miles per gallon on the highway?
Yeah.
Which is pretty impressive.
No, it's extraordinary, you know, the kind of fuel economy these guys are pulling out of it. And, you know, with emission standards that are incredibly clean.
Absolutely. And, you know, you can't kill yourself in a garage running the car from the carbon monoxide anymore. You just
right.
display so much oxygen, you pass out that way. But,
right.
you know, why do I even know this stuff?
Ladies and gentlemen, the man who knew too much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we'll just have to get a spoon and start scooping knowledge out of his head.
Hey, there is the most inappropriately named car in the business right now.
Which is?
Smart.
It's amazing what shows up here. I mean,
well, here come the old school 50s semis. There's a group of about 10 of them that come up here every year.
And like old Mac, like conventional.
Like Cannonball. Remember
the old Cannonball on, yeah.
Yeah, the old Cannonball show, which is really
boy,
old.
We have really dated ourselves.
Yeah.
And there's one episode on YouTube I found.
And you can hear them blowing their horns.
And, you know, here we are Wednesday night. This place hasn't even gotten going yet.
Tomorrow will be bigger.
Tomorrow will be bigger. Friday night, this place is going to be hopping.
Yeah. It's all about the weather. It's all about the weather. I live right over that tree line there, and it's been, well, it hasn't been like this for days, but whenever the weather is nice, whether it's May, June, or early July, there's
the car show up.
Hey, speaking of Broderick Crawford, look at the old police car.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's Andy Griffith's.
A 61 Polara. Oh, boy. Nope. It's not a Polara. It is a Seneca. Ooh. I thought it was a hood scoop. It's a siren on the front fender.
Is that the Mayberry RFD?
No, because Mayberry RFD only drove Fords.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yep. And
so the same era, but not a wrong brand.
You know, I mean, obviously, Mayberry was one of those, you know, in the pocket of probably Ruby was probably the zone manager down there when they were doing the show. Let's put all the cops in our Fords. Everybody will want one because down in the South they try to outrun the police. The only way you can do that is with a cop car. This is still an amazing. I mean, I'm looking here at a Prowler, a Fiero, a modified and customized Fiero, which is an interesting concept in and of itself.
Right.
And looks like a replica Cobra. That's not a half bad replica.
Don't forget the LeBaron, Jim.
Oh.
But not just any LeBaron. That's the, that was the oh, God, I've just fetched out on it. The infamous from Seinfeld. The John...
Oh, I know the episode you're thinking of.
Oh, well.
Anyway. Right.
Another javelin. You know, what I haven't seen here, though, seriously, are things like Comet Calientes. There was a hot comet that
yeah,
was...
Yeah, no, I saw one.
You
earlier,
did see one?
Yeah.
And people forget there was a hot Falcon for a while, the Falcon Sprint, and they put 260 small blocks in them, and they built some with Hypo 289s. Right. I mean, these were amazing cars.
Right.
It was sort of like a lightweight 64.5 Mustang, which is a scary thought.
And for those who are just listening, I'll translate. Jim meant Falcon.
Sorry,
Falcon.
Yeah, I think it's Orion, Michigan up here, so I've got that wrong too.
And what the hell is this thing? It looks like a 3-row seat.
That's
dune
a 6-passenger dune buggy, apparently.
With a gigantic wing on the back.
Yeah, I think that's to basically roll the car over on its rear wheels. I mean,
so to our viewers, if you ever thought about coming, it is a cultural phenomenon happening. It's really unlike anything else
in the world.
If you show up for this thing and you don't see something that makes you grin, you don't have any blood in your veins.
Yeah. You're not into cars.
Yep.
Especially if you're here on Saturday. I mean, it literally becomes sensory overload. Because, you know, what I like doing is hanging out with my buds on the corner and we all try to identify what's what.
Right.
And after about 40 minutes of that, your brain goes to mush.
Yeah. There's so much stuff.
There's just too much. Look at this Kaiser Derren.
Ooh.
We're driving with the door open.
Well, you can drive.
Because those were sliding doors.
One of two cars you could drive with the doors open.
What was the other?
BMW Z1. They rolled down into the rockers.
Yeah, that's right.
Electric doors. Now, there's something everybody was asking for.
There was a time when people wouldn't drive cars like that out here at the Dream Cruise. They wouldn't drive a 1950s Porsche out here either, just for fear that people were going to be stupid. They'd be, you know, lighting up the tires and potentially have an accident.
They've only had one incident.
Things slowed down so much that... You know, that people are willing to take their prized cars.
Well,
then
you gotta understand, now there's a chance you're gonna be hit by some sort of collectible car. And there may be some merit in that, you know. And here's a chance, you know, you can get run over by an exotic.
Yeah.
If you're gonna get hit by a car, you know, it should be something that you would want to get hit. Yeah.
Actually, in my experience, if you come down here Saturday morning early, and by early I mean anytime before 10 o'clock, then you'll see some of the real expensive stuff come
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
Because it does get crazy here. And even though you say there's been one incident in the whole time, I mean, if you come out here Saturday afternoon, it's bumper to bumper, stop and go.
It's a parking lot. And a lot of cars will overheat in that thing. So the guys that are driving want to drive them, get it in. And they also will show up towards the end before the 9 o'clock sweep.
Right. Yeah, that's the other thing that happens. All the police start coming down Woodward and... pushing everyone off, and then
route them through the neighborhoods.
Then it's over.
Oh yeah, just over the tree line.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Well, it's been. We took a lot of chances with this broadcast.
We did.
The weather held.
We had a lot of great people, fantastic cars.
Yeah, really.
Clearance satellites didn't crash here, so that's good.
We appreciate all the people from the manufacturers, all the executives, all of our viewers tuning in. It's been a lot of fun.
Let's do it next year.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
There'll probably be a Dream Cruise next year, yeah.
Yeah. And we'll be back next week, actually.
So, Tom Murphy from Wards, thanks for stopping by.
Glad
Jim Hall, 2953 Analytics, and of course, the Auto Extremist, Peter.
Glad to be here.
Glad to be here. Okay, folks, we're signing off.
Autoline After Hours live from Woodward Avenue is brought to you by Mopar, Chrysler Group's service, parts, and customer care brand. For more info, visit mopar.com/Woodward. Saab, move your mind. Visit cruisethe95.com. Bridgestone, passion for excellence. And by Hyundai. People are talking about Hyundai uncensored. See what they're saying at Hyundai.com.